Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out of a smoking gun. Now some of you have lived through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant lands.
Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? All right, all right, all right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here in downtown Chicago, here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. That means one artist, two songs. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. Two for Tuesday, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Coming up in just a few minutes, the great Joe Bob Briggs is going to be joining us. He's a legend. He's been on the show. It's been a long time since Joe Bob's been on the show. Joe Bob Briggs, drive-in. He hosts The Last Drive-In on Shudder. And you can check out his website, joebobbriggs.com. He is going to be part of the Cinepocalypse Film Festival, which is at the Music Box Theater. His performance is going to be on June 18th, and he's going to be doing Joe Bob Briggs, How Rednecks Saved Hollywood. It's an evening with Joe Bob Briggs. The guy's a legend, and we're going to talk B-movies and drive-in movies and all kinds of amazing stuff. And his career, he's just been around for forever, and he's just the best, and he's funny, and he's smart, and he knows his stuff, and he loves B movies, and he loves obscure, like weird B horror movies as well, which is what we're going to get into a little bit later on in the show. Cult horror movies, not the big ones that you know about already, you know, the like your Shinings and your Halloweens, your Exorcists, and Night of the Living Dead, and Nightmare on Elm Street. We're talking about like these kind of obscure, weird little horror movies that we'll get into thanks to Joe Bob Briggs' appearance on the show. Also coming up, we're going to have members of the band Pixel Grip in, and they have a new album out called Heavy Handed, which is available at Apple Music, Spotify, and Bandcamp.com. We're going to hear a little bit of that music, and also they have an upcoming show at Cole's Bar. 2338 North Milwaukee Avenue, and that is on Saturday night, on June 15th on Saturday night. So that's all coming up right here on the show. We're also going to talk about recipes that we need to bring back that nobody makes anymore. So we're going to kick off the show with the great Joe Bob Briggs coming up to talk about his new show, How Rednecks Saved Hollywood, and how you can see that at the Music Box Theater on June 18th. We will talk to we'll talk to Joe Bob Briggs coming up after the break. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text and for your Two for Tuesday request.
Hear me.
And also, you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected with us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. So that's what's coming up on the show this morning. Let me say hello to the group that's working on the show this morning. Tom's on the phone right now. Taking a call. There he is. There he is. Tom Hush, everybody. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, man.
Good. So it's a Two for Tuesday. We'll get some of those requests coming in and all that cool stuff. Joe Bob Briggs is going to be on the show. I know you're a fan.
I'm flipping out. And I used to watch him when I caught him doing Monster Vision on TNT. That was my introduction to Joe.
Yeah.
And then I've just followed him ever since when he did the last drive-in 24-hour marathon. Mm-hmm. That was crazy. And then when they decided to bring him back for a full show, I was over the moon.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't been on the show. It's been a long time since he's been on the show. I want to say 14 years, maybe.
Man.
13, 14 years it's been. Since the last time he was up, he's been at Flashback Weekend. He's been there a couple of times at Flashback. And so, yeah, I think it's been a long time since he's been here, but he's still the best. He's still great. And we got a lot to talk about, including the upcoming event at the Music Box Theater on June 18th. Joe Bob Briggs, How Rednecks Saved Hollywood. So there you go. Let's go into the newsroom. It's Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Morning, sir.
How are you, man?
I'm all right. Doing good.
Yeah. You familiar with Joe Bob Briggs?
No.
Oh,
not
man.
Familiar with him.
Legendary, yeah. Legendary TV host, drive-in guy, who's written books, and he's great. He's a connoisseur of B movies and stuff like that.
Mm. I'll be listening.
And he's written some great books and interesting and fun guy. So I'm excited. It's been a very long time. Like I said, it's been a long time since Joe Bob's been on the show. So we're excited to welcome him back. So. How you doing, Vic?
Very, very well, actually. It's only Tuesday, but full of energy. I don't know.
Oh, all right. Well, there
had
you go.
Had a great meal. Maybe it's that.
Maybe
slept
that's
all
it
day.
Is.
Maybe it's that.
Slept all day. Ate well. There you go. That all adds up to good things, I think.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, so that's what's coming up on the show again. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Any questions or anything like that? If you got a question for Joe Bob, Joe Bob Briggs is going to be with us live here. So you can call up if you want, 312-981-7200. There you go. All right. Let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, Joe Bob Briggs will be here. And again, Joe Bob Briggs, How Rednecks Saved Hollywood, June 18th at the Music Box Theater as part of the Cinepocalypse Film Festival. We'll tell you all about that and a lot more.
Joe Bob, let's drive in show.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is 2 for Tuesday. Get your request in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. The Music Box Theater is being taken over by the Cinepocalypse Film Fest. We've talked to those guys about it in the past, and there's a lot of really cool events, one of which is fantastic. It's on June 18th. It's all at the Music Box Theater. And it's Joe Bob Briggs, An Evening with Joe Bob Briggs, How Rednecks Saved Hollywood. Joe Bob Briggs is a legend. It's been a very long time since he's been on the show, but we've had him on a few times, and always, always great to talk to. He is a drive-in movie critic. He is an author, and he's just a legend, and we want to welcome him back to the show. Joe Bob, welcome back.
Thanks. It's been a while, Nick.
Yeah, it has. It has been a while. It's been too long, I think.
I know it has. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm excited about coming to Chicago next week. It's going to be interesting because normally I only do this show in cities that love their Confederate monuments, and so this will be interesting to do it in the North.
Yeah. So what's the concept for this one? How Redneck Saved Hollywood. When did you come up with this?
Well, I can't. It's really hard to explain the show. It's a combination of comedy, history, film, insanity. I mean, there's 250 clips and stills in a 2-hour show. That's how fast it goes.
Wow!
But you learn things you would never know that you needed until I put them in the rear lobe of your brain, and so. It's kind of a weird show that I've sort of developed over a number of years, and I've done it all over the country, I've never done it in Chicago, and so this will be interesting. I the guys at the Music Box have been really nice, and asked me to give it a try there, so.
I'm sure it'll go over. I'm sure they'll love it, Joe. I'm sure that they'll love it.
Yeah, well, they love it in Jackson, Mississippi. We'll see if they love it in Chicago.
Well, listen, let's go back in time. And how did Joe Bob Briggs, how did that happen for you? When did that all start?
Oh, man. Well, we're going back to the 80s, if you can ask me that question. I mean,
yeah.
We don't have time to do all the decades. I was the film critic at the Dallas Times-Herald, and I noticed that there were certain movies that were never reviewed by the mainstream media, and they all opened at the drive-in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Chicago, it's the same movies that in Chicago probably would have opened at the grindhouses downtown.
When they had grindhouses,
yeah.
That's where I grew up. That's where I grew up going to movies, in those theaters, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, so you know.
Yeah.
And These were movies that were considered disposable trash by the mainstream media. So They were never reviewed. They were considered almost on the level of pornography. And so, you know, exploitation films. And so I started going to the drive-in to review them and started a column called Joe Bob Goes to the Drive-In. And this was at a time when there was the term pop culture had only recently been invented.
Yeah, yeah.
And so people were not into pop culture, especially at a newspaper. And so, you know, the column took off, and then I became, then the movie channel asked me to come and guest host some movies. And they kept asking me to come back every week. And I was there for 11 years. And I don't even think we had a contract for the first 4 years.
Yeah.
And so, and then I just moved the show over. I was off the air for like 4 months and then just moved the show over to TNT. To a show called Monster Vision. It was really the exact same show as the drive-in theater show on the movie channel.
Yeah.
I was going for the Bob Newhart record. You know how he just like does the same show over and over and over again.
Right.
So, and then, you know, 17 years later, these guys at the Shudder streaming service say, "Hey, let's give it a try over here." You know, and I say, "Well, what kind of show you want to do?" They say, "The exact same show you did before, Monster Vision." They're like, "You can't do that in TV. You know, you can't repeat something. It's a 20-year-old format." And they were like, no, that's what we want. Exactly the same show." And so we did exactly the same show, and it's been renewed. It's working over there. Yeah. So.
I remember,
so I'm doing that.
I remember. I go back to the movie channel days with you, and loved it, and loved everything since then. I'm so glad that you're back on Shudder, which for people who might not know, this is an AMC streaming platform, correct?
Yeah, it's a horror streaming service that's owned by AMC, and. But we kind of go against the streaming gospel. You know, the Netflix gospel is that, you know, the future is one person watching one thing at a time, on one device at the time that they want to watch it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
However, because of the way we started this show, we started it with a 24-hour marathon, last summer. And when the marathon aired, you had to watch it on the live feed, and so it immediately crashed all the servers. not all the servers on not just the servers on Shudder, but all the servers on the Sundance channel. I don't know how they're related, but
wow.
We also crashed the Sundance channel, and so so you know, for the first 30 minutes people were saying, "I'm so pissed off. I'm never giving another dime to AMC or Shudder or anybody."
Yeah.
You know. And then after 30 minutes, I started getting these messages, you know, "Oh my God. Oh my God. Joe Bob, do you know what happened? What happened? All the servers crashed. You broke the internet." You know, nobody can see the show. And I'm like, "Is that a good thing?" "Yeah, it's a great thing. Nobody can see the show." I kind of worked hard on the show. I kind of like want people to see it. No, this is wonderful. Nobody can see it. You know. So at the end of the 24-hour marathon, they had so many angry people. I mean, the people eventually got back on, or they, you know, it was intermittent through the night, but. At the end of the 24-hour marathon, they immediately put it up for downloads because they had so many pissed off people.
Yeah.
So that became the springboard for all the other shows we've done since then, and everyone loves it. If we get banned from Twitter or something else happens online.
Yeah.
You know, it's like every week there's something like that. But anyway, my point is we have an audience that shows up for the live appointment just like your show, you know, where you have people in the middle of the night, they're watching your show. We have people that show up, you know, every time we have a show for the live feed, and there's this huge social media presence. There's a community. In other words, there's a community of these horror people who watch the show. And that kind of goes against the streaming gospel, which is, you know, one person, one device, one point in time.
Yeah.
And supposedly that's the future of everything. But I don't really think it is, because
I do these
movie intros all over the country. And people will say, you know, and I'll have a show of hands, how many have already seen the movie? Well, 90% have already seen the movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like, so why do they come? Because it's a different experience when you watch it with other people.
Yeah.
And there's a desire to do that, you know. And so I really don't think the whole future of movies is watching movies on your phone.
Yeah.
I really don't think
I would be disappointed if that were the only case. It really would. And I love what you do, Joe Bob. I think it's great. And what are some of the movies over the years that you've hosted that get the best responses?
Well, the movies that get the best responses are either the great classic movies like Hellraiser or the worst movies in history, like The Howling Seven. You know, I can go either way.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's the ones in between where you have a hard time selling them, you know.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, whenever somebody's starting a cult film series in some city that doesn't really have a cult film audience, you know, I tell them, you got to show Evil Dead 2 the first year. You know, you can't expect people to watch the more obscure, you know, cult titles right away. You know,
yeah.
But there's a handful of, you know, Class of 1984. All these movies are from the 80s. You know,
yeah.
There's a nostalgia for the 80s. There's a love of the 80s. There's a feeling that the 80s were a you know, an experimental time and a bold time for exploitation filmmaking.
And also
the 70s were actually better,
the 80s really, the video boom, you know, like kids going to the local video store getting the video nasties and all the horror movies. That's where it all started. The VHS tapes in the 80s with these exploitation movies really took off.
Oh, I know. You know, for example, you know, like my director of the Shudder Show, he's 34 years old. He's a millennial.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so he says, I want to start the series, with Chud. You know, the movie Chud?
Yeah, sure.
Animalistic humanoid underground dwellers.
Absolutely.
And I say, why would we start the series with Chud? It sucks. And he says, no, it has this huge cult following. He says, watch it again, rewatch it. So I go rewatch it, and I come back to him and say, still sucks. and he says, no, it's got this great cult following. It's like developed this following over the years. And because he's been right so many times, I trust him. And I say, okay, we'll start this, you know, start the whole series with Chud. I said, I'm not going to revise my opinion. You know, we're going to really hammer Chud,
right?
You know, so sure enough, we show Chud. Everybody shows up for Chud. I mean, I think there's 30 seconds of Chuds in the movie. There's 30 seconds of actual monsters in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's a bunch of what I call Shakespeare in the Park actors, you know?
Right.
Who are slumming. They're slumming in the horror world.
Yeah.
You know, it's John Hurd and Daniel Stern and Norman Mailer's wife is in the movie.
I mean,
it's just this New York intellectuals, you know, making a horror film.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm kind of like not, you know, a big fan of it. But I say, when people tell me, oh, I love Chud, I say, okay, what do you love about it? And they'll say, remember that box in the video store?
Yeah.
I say, And I say, well, not really. Oh, it was just the greatest box ever. I said, well, when you took the box off the shelf at the video store, did you take it home and take the movie out of the box and watch the movie? And they're like, oh, I just remember that box.
You know? There you go. Yeah. Listen, there's this
nostalgia for the actual video store experience.
There
you know?
Is. Yeah. You know, I'll tell you what though, Joe Bob. It's not as bad as Chud 2 Bud the Chud, which is
Oh no. One of the worst sequels in history.
Yeah.
Okay, Joe. The fact that they made a sequel is shameless.
It's incredible. Joe Bob, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, there you go. Joe Bob Briggs is with us. Legendary Joe Bob Briggs. He's going to be appearing at the Music Box Theater on June 18th as part of the Cinepocalypse Film Festival, doing an evening with Joe Bob Briggs, How Redneck Saved Hollywood. It's going to be great, and everybody should go. We're going to talk more with Joe Bob. If you want to jump in, we got a couple of texts that have come in, questions for Joe Bob. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and we'll get back to Joe Bob after the news, which is next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requested now. One artist, two songs. Get them in now at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up after the 2 o'clock news, we're going to be talking with the group Pixel Grip. They've got a new album called Heavy Handed. It's available on Apple Music, Spotify, Bandcamp.com, and they're going to join us to hang out. We're going to listen to some of their music, and they're playing a show on June 15th at Cole's Bar, 2338 North Milwaukee Avenue. So that's coming up. We're also going to talk about some really culty horror movies, and that's in honor of our current guest, Joe Bob Briggs, the great Joe Bob Briggs. He is the Last Drive-In host on Shudder, and he's going to be in town June 18th at the Music Box Theater as part of Cinepocalypse Film Festival, and he's going to be presenting an evening with Joe Bob Briggs, How Rednecks Saved Hollywood. And let's get Joe Bob back on the show. Welcome back, Joe Bob.
Thanks, Nick.
Absolutely.
You got to come to the show next week. You got to come to the show. I don't know when you sleep. Do you sleep in the morning?
I do. I sleep in the afternoon. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, the show's going to be over before your show starts, so you got to come to the show at the Music Box. You got
to
see this.
I want
you specifically to see this.
I would love to come and see it. You know, the last time that I saw you, Joe Bob, was one of your appearances at the Flashback Horror Convention back in the day.
When we
had the drive-in outside in the parking lot outside of the hotel. Mike and Mia Kerrs run Flashback Convention. And you opened up the drive-in for us with your drive-in.
With the drive-in oath.
I
deputized everybody. That's right.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And that was the last time that I saw you. That was a long time ago. But we still do the convention, and we show some movies outside too each night. And and I've been with that convention since 2002. And we've got this year we've got Bruce Campbell, Sam Raimi, Ted Raimi, Robert Englund, incredible lineup.
Oh, my God.
Lance Hendrickson.
Oh, my God.
A Candyman reunion with Virginia Madsen and a whole bunch of incredible.
Those are huge names.
And also, we're doing a really big, I think the biggest reunion of Night of the Creeps ever. Like, everybody from Night of the Creeps is going to be
call.
There.
Yeah. Good call. That's another one of those, you know. There's a heavy fan base for that's grown in reputation over the decades since it came out, and people love that movie, so that'll be well attended.
It's going to be great, and Tom Atkins, of course, is just legendary in that movie, and it's so much fun. I wanted to mention one of the times that you were at the Flashback convention with us. You did a fantastic presentation where you did basically commentary while everybody was watching I Spit on Your Grave. And I found that to be really fascinating. And you actually turned my mind around on that movie, because I was very negative on it until I watched you do the commentary.
Well, you know, probably part of the reason you were negative on it is that Siskel and Ebert had done a show on it you know, back in the 79 or whenever it came out, in which they said it was the best argument for censorship of movies, of any movie they had ever seen.
Yeah.
And it destroyed the career of that director. And I always thought it was a pro-woman movie. It's a pro-woman anti-rape movie. And so when they released the DVD, the director called me up and he said, "Hey, you that guy who wrote a positive review of I Spit on Your Grave?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Would you do the commentary track on the DVD?" And I said, "Sure, but why are you calling me?" And he says, "Because you're the only person that ever wrote a positive review of I Spit on Your Grave."
Yeah.
And so I've actually done that live commentary a couple of times on that particular movie, simply because it's so notorious.
Yeah, and it was originally called Day of the Woman, which a lot of people don't even remember. Was it Jerry Gross? It was the distributor of that film.
Yeah, it was an exploitation distributor at the time. But Mayer Zarkey, the director, really thought that he was making a feminist movie. It was when it came out, it was portrayed as the worst, you know, anti-woman movie ever made. So it has that, you know, it still has that reputation to this day.
I vividly remember Siskel and Ebert's show. Obviously as a film geek who grew up in Chicago, I'm very familiar with Siskel and Ebert, obviously. And that was I saw it at this theater in Chicago called the Luna Theater. And because of that, I will say this, though, Joe Bob, because of that review, because of those notorious reviews where they ripped that movie to shreds, it played at the Luna for months. Like, there were
oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, there were lines around the block because of that. So the entire thing backfired on Siskel and Ebert.
Yeah, I'm sure that's probably true, but it killed the careers of the people that were involved with the movie.
Yeah.
And so... Yeah, it was like, oh, we're not going to touch that. You know, that was one of those resume killers.
Yeah. Well, it was fascinating to hear your commentary. That was a highlight of that flashback weekend, I got to tell you, Joe Bob.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
Hey, I got a text here from Chris in Elk Grove who says, "Can you ask Joe Bob if he still keeps in touch with Honey, the first male girl?"
Well, yes, I do, as a matter of fact. And Honey, the male girl, became a lawyer.
Uh-huh.
in Indiana,
uh-huh.
and continues to practice law to this day in the state of Indiana. Yes.
Okay. And Chris also says that he wanted to let you know that the new male girl, Darcy, is awesome.
She is awesome. She's the first male girl that actually is a, you know, horror aficionado. She's a horror blogger herself. Has watched far more movies than I have watched.
Yeah.
People think I'm such an expert. I can't be the total expert because there are guys who never leave their apartment who watch eight movies a day. You know, mm-hmm. And so they come to events where I'm going to talk and they say, you know, "Did you see this 1947? And then I immediately say, "No. Before you describe it, no, I haven't seen it. I know you've seen it." You know.
We have Steph, Carla, Jackie, all listening. They love you, Joe Bob, and they want to know what your favorite recent horror film is.
Favorite recent horror film?
Yeah.
You know, it's a great time for horror, and I would have to say, it depends on what you mean by recent. You mean past 10 years? You mean past 2 years?
Yeah.
You know, I would say Get Out, and the reason I would say Get Out is that Jordan Peele invented a new, I won't say a new genre, but a new subgenre of horror that didn't exist before, which is, you know, politically, it's like some of the special effects in that thing are no better than blood-sucking freaks, you know, when they get into the brain surgery stuff. But you don't mind it because he's established this world that you've never seen on screen before. Mm-hmm. And so the sort of bringing Roger Corman made movies for years that had a deep political subtext. Jordan Peele brought the subtext like right up almost to the surface of the film. And so that kind of sort of socially conscious, politically charged horror is like a new thing.
Yeah.
That's a new thing in horror. And anybody who does something new in horror, I would rather watch one of those than 50 homages to the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think Us is a terrific movie too. I think both of his films are really good. Both of his horror movies. And over the recent years, the ones that stand out for me, Hereditary scared the hell out of me. And I thought Toni Collette was amazing in that movie. And that's one of my favorite horror movies of the past bunch of years.
Yeah, very powerful. Did you see Terrifier?
Yes, I did.
You're not a fan. I can tell by the tone of your voice. You're not a fan. Art the Clown didn't do it for you.
No. I did like, here's another one that I absolutely love is The Babadook.
The Babadook, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that movie. Yeah.
We showed one on the show called Deathgasm. Have you seen Deathgasm?
Oh, yes, I have. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
probably one of the finest horror films ever to come out of New Zealand.
Yeah. Yeah.
The thing is, the young filmmakers who do horror today what can I say, oddly enough, their films are slick.
Yeah,
their films are slick. They're not down and dirty and gritty like the young filmmakers of the 80s.
Yeah.
Part of the reason I think is that filmmaking has become so inexpensive that you can do all the bells and whistles that used to be beyond the financial means of a guy who is making a low budget horror film,
yeah,
making his first film.
Yeah.
Today, you can buy some software and do those things. And so,
yeah.
And so, so what we don't have is we don't have that grindhouse feel,
right,
to these more recent movies.
Yeah.
People
are shooting movies on iPhones now. I mean, Steven Soderbergh made two movies with an iPhone.
Yeah, not really a fan of that.
Yeah,
but,
you know, yeah, yeah, like, I understand.
No, it's like rent a camera, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. So, listen, Joe Bob, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, we're going to take another break here. Joe Bob Briggs, the great Joe Bob Briggs, is with us. The Last Drive-In is on Shudder. You can go to his website, joebobbriggs.net, and he is going to be in town, and I highly recommend that you check him out. He's just so incredibly entertaining and funny and smart, and it's going to be a great show. An Evening with Joe Bob Briggs, How Rednecks Saved Hollywood, at the Music Box Theater on June 18th as part of the Cinepocalypse Film Festival. More with Joe Bob Briggs right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and it's 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in. We'll play them in a little bit. It's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're going to talk with the band Pixel Grip after the 2 o'clock news. They've got a new album called Heavy Handed. We'll talk about that, plus their upcoming show at Cole's Bar, which is at 2338 North Milwaukee in Chicago, on Saturday night. So we'll talk about that. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, I am happy to get back to the conversation with a legend, Joe Bob Briggs, who is going to be appearing at the Music Box Theater on June 18th, presenting An Evening with Joe Bob Briggs, How Rednecks Saved Hollywood. And that's part of the Cinepocalypse Film Festival, and you can check out joebobbriggs.net as well. Joe Bob, welcome back.
Thanks.
Yeah. I want to get serious for just a moment here. I did not know that you were nominated for a Pulitzer Prize by the United Press International for your eyewitness coverage of 9/11. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Sure.
Yeah.
I was living downtown in Manhattan and saw the first plane I was getting ready for work and saw the first plane out my window. I was working for UPI at the time, but I was doing humorous stuff. I wasn't doing serious.
Right. Sure.
I wasn't doing serious journalism. Saw the first plane hit the tower. Turned on CNN. Thought it was an accident. Turned on CNN, and they were reporting it as even after the second plane, they were reporting it as strange accidents that were starting at LaGuardia Airport. You know, strange things that were happening to the air traffic control. I don't think they have saved any of that reporting that they did in the first few minutes of it. So, but you know, because there had been a terrorist attempt in the basement of the World Trade Center about
93. Yeah.
I don't know, about 6 years before. Or something. Seven years. I immediately, you know, sort of, you know, sized it up and, you know, got out of the building. And by the time I got out of my building, I was only about four blocks from the second. When the second tower went down. And so I called my boss at UPI and I said, "Well, I just saw the whole thing. Do you actually it took me an hour to get through to my boss because the cell phones weren't working.
Yeah.
And I said, "Well, I just saw the whole thing. Do you want and I got pictures, you know, I said, "Do you want you want me to write it up?" And he says, "You know, how fast can you do that? Because UPI is all about, you know, getting it out in the next 5 minutes, you know."
Yep.
And I said, "Well, I'm, you know, I'm all I have is my, you know, I don't really have anything to write with." I said, put a rewrite guy on the phone. And so I did the first article the old fashioned way where you dictate it from your head to the guy who's typing it. And so he said, "Okay, keep covering this story." So I kept going down to Ground Zero for about 3 weeks after that and doing various articles on it. I didn't have any credentials to go to Ground Zero, so I would have to sneak in every day.
Oh, man.
I would go into Chinatown or wherever I thought there was a hole in the security fence.
And
there always was one.
Wow.
And I would write about, you know, just sort of the I just did articles every day on the thing, and they nominated them for the
That's amazing. That's amazing. You know, I got to say, well, so were you able to get back to your apartment? I mean, because if you live that close,
They shut it down for they shut down the whole building for I want to say about a month, you know, before they let people go in and get their pets and things like that, but you had to find some other place to stay for a good while after that.
That's amazing.
Plus I think all the power was out anyway.
Yeah. I can't even imagine what it would have been like to be in Lower Manhattan when that happened. I can't even imagine. I mean,
I've never even gone to the museum or the any of the memorials that they have there. I don't know. I just never wanted to relive it, but people come into town and that's what they want to see. That's like probably one of the top two or three tourist attractions now in New York City. And so, you know, I take them down there, show them where it is, say, "I'll be at the bar."
Right. Yeah. Well, that's amazing. I had no idea that you did that. And, you know, that's really incredible. Really incredible. Yet another facet to Joe Bob Briggs that we were finding out about this morning. So let me ask you this. When you put The Last Drive-In together, how long does it take you to put that show? How long does it take you to assemble to put the show together and all that?
Oh, man, it takes forever. You know why? Because people are so smart now. When I was doing when I was doing the show at TNT in the 90s, pre-internet or in the early days of the internet, people, there was no information on the movies, and so whatever information I would research was basically the only information on the movie, you know?
Yeah.
Now, now one of these exploitation movies comes out. You know, there's 1,000 reviews of it the next morning, mm-hmm. All over the internet. And then there's all kinds of, you know, articles on how it was made and everything. And so the chances of me saying something stupid about the movie are magnified by 1,000 now, because somebody is going to say, no, you are absolutely wrong about that.
Yeah.
And they love to do that. They love to trip me up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
They love to point out how stupid I am. And so the research, for just talking about these movies in hopefully an entertaining way, but an informative way and a truthful way, has become 1,000 times more complicated. And that's the main thing that's changed about, about doing the show.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to, one more time, I want to mention, this is going to be such a great night at the Music Box Theater, part of Cinepocalypse Film Festival on June 18th, an evening with Joe Bob Briggs, How Rednecks Saved Hollywood. You will tell us about the identity of the first redneck in history, the precise date the first redneck arrived in America. Of course, the most sacred redneck cinematic moments. You said there are over 215 clips and stills, and you're going to tell us the existential difference between Forrest Gump and Sling Blade.
That's exactly right. Yes, you're going to learn all that. And you are going to learn it, Nick, because you're going to be there. I'm putting your tickets at the will call. You are going to be there that night.
Oh. Yeah. It's going to be great. And the Cinepocalypse guys really have a good time each year now putting this fest together. They've got a whole bunch of really great guests coming in. They're screening some classic movies and some new movies and all kinds of cool stuff. It's a fun fest. I talked with the artistic director last week about it, and the whole fest seems like it's going to be a good time. And I think obviously your presentation is going to be a highlight, no question about it.
And for years now, people in Chicago have said, you guys need a show at the Music Box. You got to do a show at the Music Box. You know, in terms of cult movie, temples.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Music Box, apparently, in Chicagoland is number one, or at least with my audience.
No, trust me. Have you never done a show at the Music Box then?
I've never done a show at the Music Box.
You're going to love it.
It's a little scary because they say there's 800 seats there, you know, so that's scary. But anyway.
It's a beautiful theater. It's got the stars and the clouds on the ceiling. They play organ music before the movie. They pull the curtain up, the big red curtain. You know, it's old school, and it's one of the most beautiful venues in the city. It really is. You're going to love it.
I am going to love it, I'm sure. Yeah.
All right. Joe Bob, thanks so much, man. It's been too long since we talked. We got to do it a little bit more often, okay?
I agree with that, Nick. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Take care. We'll see you on the 18th.
Okay, great.
There you go. Joe Bob Briggs, everybody. The guy's a legend. And he's written so many great books. Go back and look some of his books. One of them is called Profoundly Disturbing, Shocking Movies That Changed History, which is actually one of my favorite movie books of all time. He's a great guy. His real name is John Bloom, and he's an amazing guy and so entertaining. And it's going to be great. June 18th at the Music Box Theater, an evening with Joe Bob Briggs, How Rednecks Saved Hollywood. And it's gotten rave reviews, and he does a great job. And his show is The Last Drive-In, and you can see it on Shudder, the streaming service Shudder. So there you go. Great to talk to him. Great day. I mean, it was too long, man. I think it was like 2006 was the last time I had him on the show.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyway, he's the best. And yeah, I know you were excited because you're a big fan.
Oh, my God, yeah. That was my bastion for really weird movies, was watching Monster Vision on TNT.
Like, yeah.
My folks weren't necessarily letting me rent that from the movie store. I always wanted to.
Yeah.
I always wanted to, but that way I could sneak into the basement. You know, they'd be asleep, and I could watch, Monster Vision.
You could watch Joe Bob. All right, we're going to take a break, and the news is coming up right after this. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here in downtown Chicago here until 5 a.m. It is Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And because we talked with Joe Bob Briggs, we're going to talk about some cult horror movies that you need to watch and jump into that kind of stuff. And also we're going to talk about some recipes that people don't make anymore but should. So there's lots more coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. The music that you just heard is from a group called Pixel Grip. And their new album is called Heavy Handed. It's available on Apple Music and Spotify, Bandcamp.com, and all that stuff. And I want to welcome to the studio. We have Jonathan Friend. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Rita Lucia. Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very good.
Good. And then Tyler Oman. Hi, Tyler.
Hello.
How you doing, man?
I'm good, thank you.
Good, good, good. Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming down. I really appreciate it. Pixel Grip. First of all, where'd the name come from?
Name came from Rita and I just tossing around ideas a couple of years ago, just trying to throw a bunch of stuff at the wall, seeing what sticks,
and that stuck.
It was, something that we heard.
We like the idea of a paradox.
Okay. So, there you go. All right, that makes sense. So now, I asked you guys off the air, how long have you guys have been working together, Rita and Jonathan, you've been working together for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how did you guys meet?
Well, we all three of us went to high school together out in Crystal Lake.
That's where he's from.
Yeah, yeah.
Tom, my producer, is from Crystal Lake. That's just a coincidence. He had no idea. You guys are all from Crystal Lake?
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to his high school?
We went to the one on the north side.
We went to the rival school.
Wait. What are the two rival schools then? Which one did you go to?
Central.
Okay.
And then Prairie Ridge, or as the locals affectionately call it, Preppy Ridge.
Preppy Ridge.
Which is a very affluent high school.
Tom, is that where you went?
No. I went to Central.
You went to Central.
These guys went to the nice high school.
Oh, you guys went to the nice high school. Exactly. I see. Oh. All right, so you guys, you met in high school then. You've known each other for a while.
Yeah.
And now you guys are all from, you're all from Crystal Lake. Do you still live in Crystal Lake?
No. We all live in Chicago now.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, agreed.
So tell me about the band and everything and how you guys got together and you guys have known each other since high school, but when did the music come into it?
Rita and I had been playing together in various bands in high school and kind of just, you know, trying to develop like what it is that we liked to do. And I always knew that she was a really good vocalist and I was playing around with production and stuff. And we kind of just linked up one day and realized we had a really good, like, working and creative chemistry together.
Yeah.
And we just made some demos like immediately the first time we linked up and then we knew it was like special.
Mm-hmm.
Just continued.
And then you brought Tyler in. Tyler, how long have you knew these guys before? And before you got into the band,
I knew of them.
You knew of
them.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'd spoken to them a couple of different times, and even heard a few demos that they were working on, and secretly wanted to work with them.
Secretly.
I did. And thankfully, they invited me in eventually.
Let's talk a little bit about your influences. That had a very distinctive sound, what we just heard, and I like that kind of stuff, like big time.
Thank you.
So tell me about the influences and what you like, what kind of music you guys like.
I really like pop music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we all love pop music,
mm-hmm.
but we like the weird side of pop music. That's not just kind of like too structured and generic. Some bands we all really love are Little Dragon and Trust and Daft Punk and mm-hmm. a lot of like house music and electronica.
Do you like the stuff? Do you like the 80s electric stuff?
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course you do. Yeah. I can tell by what I heard. I happen to be like a massive Depeche Mode fan. I've mm-hmm. seen them like five times, and I love that kind of stuff, and I think it's really cool. And I like that you guys are clearly young, because I'm old, but you guys are young, and I love the fact that you're bringing that kind of music out again, because it feels like that organic stuff from the 80s. It's really fun. How'd you get turned on to that stuff?
Well, John grew up around a lot of that stuff. His parents always spun New Wave and New Order, Depeche Mode.
Yeah,
that stuff was just around me all the time. And in high school, that's like when it all clicked, and I got really into Depeche Mode and Kraftwerk and New Order, and just
Kraftwerk, man, there you go.
So amazing,
You know, so I remember I was in a bar one time, and someone played the extended version of Autobahn in the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And like after 15 minutes, people were like, what the hell is going on? Because
it's
unusual.
Out.
Yeah, it's unusual to play a 22-minute song in the bar when you're like, what the...
That's a deep cut, man.
It is a deep cut.
Yeah.
It certainly is. Yeah. But I love all of that stuff. I mean, I grew up, in the 70s and 80s. And when that stuff hit in the early 80s, it hit hard. All the new wave stuff, I was there during the whole thing. I was into The Fix and Flock of Seagulls and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
I was at the show at Comiskey Park where the Police kicked off their Synchronicity tour.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Ministry before they went industrial. It was Ministry when they sounded like
synth
Depeche
pop.
Mode. Yeah, exactly. And Al Jorgensen doesn't like that. It was The Fix, Flock of Seagulls, Joan Jett for some reason, and the mm-hmm. Police. And that was like at the height of that stuff. Like
that
right,
sounds
right
absolutely
before,
iconic.
Well, it is. It was. And it was like right before MTV hit. You know, like right at that moment in the 80s when, you know, you guys would have loved to have been around during that time.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you right now.
Definitely.
So we want to play a little chunk. Let's play a little chunk of a song called Golden Moses. You want to tell me about this song? Because we're going to play about a minute and a half of it, a minute of it.
Yeah, so what was the file name for the song before we named it Golden Moses?
Synthpop Blues.
Does that explain it all?
I mean, yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Well, why don't we give a listen to this? This is Pixel Grip, who are playing, by the way, on June 15th at Cole's Bar, 2338 North Milwaukee Avenue. So make sure you go and check that out. All right, let's hear a little piece of the music then. Really great. You got a great voice.
Thank you.
That's a really, really interesting sound you have. Who were some of your influences as a singer? Do you have people that you liked, that vocalists?
Yeah, definitely. I'm really inspired by Amy Winehouse. She was my like youngest, I think, inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
I'm inspired by a lot of femme front people. Alice Glass comes to mind from Crystal Castles. The front person for Little Dragon, Bjork, like a lot of the non-linear female vocalists that kind of have a weird sound, really vulnerable, really like stylized vocals. Those are some of my biggest inspirations.
So the influences that you had when you were younger? You said that you lived in a house where people would listen to the new wave stuff and
my parents would play new wave records all the time. I was actually thinking earlier today how my earliest musical memory is my parents playing Tears for Fears while I was playing a Sega Genesis game, a racing game. And I think that kind of planted the seed for the trajectory of my entire life.
Yeah, Tears for Fears is one of my favorite bands. Yeah, yeah. That's great, though. You were playing Sega Genesis listening to Tears. Do you remember what Tears for Fears album? Was it Song from the Big Chair?
It was Songs from the Big Chair, and it was Everybody Wants to Rule the World, course, specifically.
Yeah.
I still am so amazed by all of their albums when I listen to it.
They're great. And even when Kurt Smith left and it was just Roland, he released three albums and they were great.
Yeah, totally.
So I love that band. Sowing the Seeds of Love is one of my favorite albums of all time in the history of music.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of those albums that I listened to constantly. Like, people would get in my car. I had a cassette player in my car. Remember cassette players? I had a cassette player in my car and people would get in the car and go, why the hell are you playing this again? It's been in the cassette player for 4 months, and I'm like, yeah, it's going to stay there.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, no, I love that band. What about you, earliest memories for music?
Earliest memories, I think I was like 9 or 10. I want to say 8 or 9 when Daft Punk had a single on the radio. And it was like that really annoying. To me, I love it. But I think to everybody else, it was like a really annoying, repetitive song.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, ooh, what's this? And my parents being like, the song is so annoying. And I was like, wait, turn it back to that station. It's so good. I love repetitive electronic music. And yeah. I still am the biggest fan of Daft Punk to this day.
Yeah. They're great. What about you, Tyler? What was your earliest music memories that you recall?
My mom was great. She would put on MTV instead of cartoons when I was a kid. And when I heard Montel Jordan's This Is How We Do It,
yeah, man!
I told my mom, I was maybe a couple years old, I was like, this is my song. She's like, okay, it's your song. And she bought it for me on cassette, and we'd play it in the car like every day on the way to daycare.
Yeah.
That bass line is so
sick. Oh, man, please.
That whole song.
No, it's a great song. Yeah. It's great. It's so incredibly catchy and so good. Okay, you guys, hang on, okay? We are talking with Rita, Jonathan, and Tyler from Pixel Grip, and you can follow them on Twitter at @PixelGrip_music, right?
It's _PixelGrip. _ for Instagram.
Oh, I see. Okay, so add a couple of underscores in there. Pixel Grip. And by the way, Cole's Bar, I've never... have you guys played there before?
Yeah, we've played there last November.
Yeah? Did you like it?
Yeah. It's a really iconic Chicago place in Logan Square.
Yeah.
Cole is doing an amazing job at curating really interesting acts that play there, but what makes it special is that the shows are always free.
Oh, that's
cool.
And
they're always on weekends, and it's just a very supportive environment to play, and it's just really comfortable. And
cool.
And he's really, like, putting out the effort to make it, like, special, and it shows.
June 15th at Cole's Bar, 2338 North Milwaukee. Guys, hang on, okay? And we're going to talk more with the Pixel Grip and hear a little bit more music right after we take this break on WGN. How you doing? Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. One artist, two songs. We talked with the great Joe Bob Briggs a little bit earlier, so we're going to jump into some cult horror movies and much more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And that music that you just heard is from a group called Pixel Grip, and we have three members from the group here live in studio, and we want to welcome them back. Jonathan Friend, Rita Lakia, and Tyler Oman. Welcome, you guys. Welcome back.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Tell me a little bit about that, what we just heard. There's a song called Diamonds. Tell me a little bit about that one.
That song is, just one that seemed to stick from the album from a lot of people. That one... We channeled a lot of disco influence. I personally was trying to make my synthesizers sound like Chic, like Nile Rodgers, as much as possible. But I think that song is also really telling of what we like to convey artistically, because it's like it's very groovy and driving, but it's also kind of moody, a little somber, a little dreamy. So it's like we like to have that element of dance, but also kind of like moments of introspection and kind of like, you know, a darker ethos at times.
Sure, I gotcha. How does the writing process work for songs?
It's always different.
Yeah?
Yeah, but a lot of times we just get into a space, we light some incense, we gotta do like a weird light, we gotta throw in a purple light in the room, we gotta throw on the Christmas lights, and then we just kind of, you know, we like chat, we maybe have a little drink, and then mainly just kind of go for it, improv. See, like, we really like to riff on, like, kind of, like, darker, like, bass lines, and we just kind of use a lot of improv.
What instruments do you all play? Let's start with you, Jonathan. What do you play?
I play synthesizers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How about you?
I'm a vocalist. Mm-hmm. I have a vocal pedal that's like a loop station, and then I also play a keyboard.
Okay. And Tyler?
I play the drums.
You play the drums.
Yeah.
Okay.
Doesn't he look like a drummer?
He does. I play drums. So, yeah, we look alike.
You can sniff each other out.
Yeah. Drummers can always sniff each other out. There's no question about it. Yeah, very cool. Do you play any electronic drums?
Not yet.
Okay.
Everything for our live set is acoustic live drums, but eventually we'll be changing that.
Yeah, up. Yeah. Because the Simmons pads, the electronic drums, are really pretty cool, and you can get a lot of different kind of sounds out of them too.
Yeah, those are really neat.
They're really cool. They're really, 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 really cool. But there's nothing like an actual kit. There's just nothing like it. So, all right, let's play another quick song here. This is called Plastic Enemies, which is a very cool title.
Thank you.
Do you want to tell me about this one, and then we'll play a minute or so of it?
I mean, yeah, it's a song with like really heavenly chords, but like a really cool bass line, and then like some, you know, moody lyrics as always. The lyrics are about falling in love with a straight girl.
Mm-hmm.
We've all been there. So, yeah.
Yes, we have. Yes, we have. All right.
We really have.
Let's hear a little bit of this. This is called Plastic Enemies, and this is Pixel Grip. Great.
Thank you.
That's really, really great, man. I just love this sound, man. This is right in my wheelhouse. I'm telling you, this is great stuff. Pixel Grip. Do you guys enjoy the recording process? Do you like that better than playing out?
It's hard to say. They're both such different worlds, and they both have like such amazing things about either domain. I come from a very like production background, so I think that recording is a place where I can shine.
Yeah.
Yeah, John is a very intelligent producer, and that's very much his like strength. He's really good at producing tracks.
Yeah. Well, the stuff sounds great. Let me just say that.
Thank you.
It sounds really terrific.
Thanks.
Yeah. But you guys do enjoy playing, you know, playing out. You guys play a lot of gigs out or
We don't really want to like, we try to be a little bit picky about playing shows. We don't want to be playing all the time. So we try to select a really like a few great shows that,
yeah.
Yeah.
And so you guys have played Kohl's before. What other places have you played around town?
I mean, we've played a lot of venues here in Chicago. We've played Talia Hall, Empty Bottle.
You play Talia Hall?
We play Talia Hall.
Wow, I love that place.
We love. The staff is there is amazing. The sound is, I mean, and the building itself is iconic.
Unbelievable. I saw John Carpenter there, the director of Halloween. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you guys know who he is because he composes electronic music. But it was unbelievable. I'd never been there before. That place is great.
Yeah.
It's really, wow. Talia Hall, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And you ever play Lincoln Hall?
Not yet.
Okay.
But that's coming up.
You guys should play Lincoln Hall. That is one of the most acoustically beautiful rooms in this city. I mean, it is set up beautifully. The sound, you never have bad sound at that place.
I agree. Lincoln Hall is perfect, almost flawless, and Sleeping Village. I don't know if you've been there yet. It's kind of new.
Yeah.
Really amazing sound there, too.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. Well, I always ask two questions of musicians when they come in. So I'm going to go right down the line. The first question is for you, Jonathan. First album you ever bought, or in your case, you're young, so maybe first thing you downloaded. Mm-hmm. That would be my guess. So
the shade.
Yeah, so what do you? So what do you? What do you? What was it?
The first CD that I got was A-Teens, which was a teen pop cover band of ABBA.
Wait a minute! What? Now Tom is laughing his ass off behind the. He's
so he knows exactly what they are.
It's a teen cover.
They're like a bunch of tweens in like the late 90s
and they
covering
ABBA.
Yeah,
that sounds pretty fantastic, actually.
I loved it.
Okay, that was your first. What about you, Rita? First
I
album
think it was like, now that's what I call music for.
Yeah, one of those.
Yeah, one of those.
Yeah,
Yeah.
And there's about 80 of those out now,
I
right?
I think they're like, yeah, I think they're on like 80 now.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Tyler, what about you? What was the first one? Montel Williams?
It was actually after
Montel
that.
Jordan. I'm sorry.
After Montel Jordan.
Montel Williams is a stupid talk show host. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
The CD was just a bunch of Halloween movie theme songs.
Oh, okay.
Just like all the iconic Halloween themes.
So like from all the horror movies?
Mm-hmm.
I like this guy, man. You guys should come out to the Flashback Horror Convention. That's coming up in August. I'm one of the hosts. And Bruce Campbell's going to be there. Sam Raimi's going to be there. It's going to be nuts. Freddy Krueger is going to be there.
Wow.
It's every year, and it's great. It's up in Rosemont. Okay, last question for you guys. First concert you ever went to?
Coldplay at, what was it? What's that? Wisconsin?
Alpine Valley?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah. Okay, Coldplay. Okay, what about you?
I went to see the Black Eyed Peas. Or no, I'm sorry. I went to go see Gwen Stefani at the Allstate Arena, and Black Eyed Peas opened for Gwen Stefani.
Wow, that's a big show.
It was a huge show, and they were famous, obviously, but they blew up after that.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Tyler, what about you? First concert.
CKY in the parking lot of the Spring Hill Mall.
Do you skateboard, man?
No.
No, okay. All right, just checking. Well, that's pretty great, man. You guys are very unique, man. It was great meeting you guys. And
thanks, likewise.
And the music is great, and I wish you the best of luck. And the album is heavy-handed. People can get it where they can download music, and Apple Music, Spotify, Bandcamp.com, and all that cool stuff. And your upcoming show, which you said is free?
Yes.
Is at Cole's Bar at 2338 North Milwaukee Avenue on June 15th. Cole's Bar. 2338 North Milwaukee Avenue. And again, you want to give up your plugs where people can get you online or on the internets?
You can follow us on Facebook, Spotify, any social media platform. Our Instagram handle is _pixelgrip_. I think it's the same for Twitter as well.
Okay.
Also want to say that we have CD and vinyl copies and t-shirts available at No Requests, which is our record label's brick and mortar shop up in Avondale.
Oh, cool.
Milwaukee,
man.
And Karlov, just past Pulaski.
Oh, very cool.
That's where all of our merch is available.
That's very cool. It's not very far from where I live, actually. Very, very, very cool. And so I like that you guys are doing vinyl. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. All right. Well, listen, it was great meeting you guys. And I wish you the best of luck. And I hope everybody goes and checks you out over at Cole's Bar on June 15th. Really, really fun having you down.
Thanks so much.
Okay, you guys. Take care. We're going to take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. And, it is a Tuesday morning, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, we're 2 for Tuesday. Who requested the Crowded House?
That was Ike.
Oh, of course, 80s.
Nice.
Yep. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. So, that was fun talking with Joe Bob Briggs.
He's unbelievable.
And, people who are listening, he hosts, he's been hosting like a drive-in movie kind of show where he showcases cult movies and B movies and movies that mostly show up at the drive-in. We thought we would, talk a little bit about, some cult horror movies that you must see before you die. And if you have some favorite B or cult movies that that aren't maybe necessarily the most popular thing in the world or mainstream thing in the world, but you've seen them 900 times and you watch them all the time and they fit into that Joe Bob Briggs drive-in B movie, cult movie kind of category, we want to hear from you guys. And we're specifically going to be talking about cult horror movies. But if you want to talk about cult movies in general and B movies, drive-in movies as well, open that up a little bit. What are your favorites, and which ones do you watch? Which ones would fit into the world of Joe Bob Briggs that you just think maybe some of them are really stupid? Like we were talking about how some of the movies that he shows are terrible, which is also the case with Sven. Sven shows, like, he showed The Car, last Saturday, which is one of the most ridiculous movies ever made.
It was a shocking film and how bad it was.
It's horrible. And of course, I was 12 when it came out, so I thought it was cool because I thought the car looked cool. I still think the car looks cool. I think the design of the car is really awesome, but it's a ridiculous movie. But yeah, so that kind of thing. But we're going to, you know, this is from What Culture, whatculture.com, this article, and it's specifically about cult horror movies. But we want to talk about cult B-movies, drive-in movies as well. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And by the way, I do want to mention my screening tonight of Ghostbusters at the AMC Rosemont 18. There are only about 20 seats left. So if you're planning on coming out, reserve your seats now because they might not be there come later on tonight at the theater. So it's the 35th anniversary celebration of Ghostbusters. It's in a completely restored 4K digital version that's going to have great sound and it's going to look amazing. It's on the huge 60-foot screen that we have in the theater, and it's going to be great. And if you've never seen it on the big screen, you should. This is, you can bring the kids to this one, and I'm sure that you know that a lot of people have never seen it on the big screen. I have a great time. It's also hilariously funny. You know, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, Rick Moranis, Sigourney Weaver, Ernie Hudson, Annie Potts. Great, memorable ghosts and characters. And it just, it's a great movie. And it starts at 8 o'clock. And like I said, there's about 20 seats left. So you're going to want to get in there now because I got a feeling we're going to sell out by the time 8 PM rolls around. So you want to get in there. If you want to come to see the movie, you better get your tickets now, and reserve your seats now. AMCtheaters.com. Go to the seating chart, pick out the seats that you want. They'll be waiting for you. But they're going fast, so I encourage you to go to amctheaters.com to make your reservations now. And also, the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant is going to host a Ghostbusters party celebration. There's going to be 15% discount on the film club members for their food. So if you have like your ticket stub or your phone that proves that you're going to see Ghostbusters, you get 15% off of anything you order food related, any food items at Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant, which is just right down the street from the theater. And the food is great. It's a really cool place. It's loaded with Bill Murray and Murray Brothers memorabilia, including stuff from Ghostbusters. And they're going to have like, I think they're going to have like special drink specials that are going to be themed, Ghostbuster themed. And I think I know what I'm going to get to eat tonight at the Caddyshack restaurant. I'm going to be there, you know, we'll probably get there between like 6 and 6:30. Relax, enjoy the atmosphere, enjoy the Ghostbusters celebrations at Murray Brothers Caddyshack. But they just have a new menu item. And you've seen Caddyshack, I'm assuming.
Of course.
Okay. And you know Spalding. Spalding, get your foot off the boat. Spalding, they bet that he's going to pick his nose, and then 10 to 1 he eats it. That's Spalding. And when Spalding, when they're about halfway through, I think they just finished the ninth hole, and they're about to take a break and have some food before they hit the back nine. And Spalding is there, and Judge Smales, and everybody, and they're walking up to the little restaurant where you can get burgers and stuff. And Spalding says, "I want a hamburger. No, I want a cheeseburger. I want a hot dog." And then Ted Knight goes, "You'll get nothing and like it." So they now have a dish at Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant, which is called the Spalding, and it is a hamburger slider, a cheeseburger slider, and a mini hot dog. With served with fries. So it's the Spalding. I want a hamburger. No, I want a cheeseburger. I want a hot dog. You'll get nothing like it. So I believe that's what I'm going to have. I'm going to have the Spalding tonight. But anyway, it's going to be fun. We're going to get there between 6 and 6:30, like I said, and then just walk right back over to the theater or drive. It's 2 seconds away, and the movie's going to start at 8. I will introduce it, and then after the movie, we'll talk about it. I got some trivia and some facts and some fun stuff that we're going to talk about after the movie. And it's a classic. I mean, it's the 35th anniversary of a truly classic comedy, Ghostbusters. Very rarely do you get to see it in this kind of presentation with the 4K digital and the incredible sound and everything. So make your reservations now. I highly recommend, like I said, there's maybe 20 seats left. So get your tickets now. Reserve your seats. AMCtheaters.com, Ghostbusters, tonight, 8 o'clock on the big screen. And beforehand, go to Murray Brothers Caddyshack Restaurant. They're going to have Ghostbuster, a Ghostbusters celebration, 35th anniversary celebration, drink specials. And if you're a film club member and you have proof that you're going to see Ghostbusters, you get 15% off on all of your food. 15% off on all your food. If you want to call Caddyshack, maybe to make reservations or to ask questions or anything, you can call 847-443-3673. That's 847-443-3673. Tell them you're with the Nick DiGilio Film Club, and you want to make a reservation, or if you have any questions about what kind of food and all that kind of cool stuff. They're very accommodating. It's a really cool place. The food is great, and we're going to have a blast. So go to Murray Brothers Caddyshack Restaurant first, 847-443-3673, and then walk on over to the movie theater, and at 8 o'clock, I will introduce the classic Ghostbusters on the big screen. Again, 10 bucks. Parking is free, completely free parking. And it's 10 bucks to get in. And again, amctheaters.com. Right now, tickets are flying. So I just wanted to make sure that if you were thinking about going, get on that. Because I believe we're going to sell out tonight. So amctheaters.com. All right. Cult horror movies is what we're talking about. We had a great, fun conversation with Joe Bob Briggs, who is going to bring his one-man show, multimedia one-man show, to the Music Box Theater on June 18th. And, you know, he is the classic connoisseur of B-movies and cult movies and stuff. So cult horror movies. And this is an article from whatculture.com. And so we'll get into some of the cult movies in a second. We got some already people who are calling in. If you want to talk about B-movies and cult movies and fun movies that are ridiculous, here's Thomas on WGN. Hi, Thomas.
Hey, good morning, Nick. How are you today?
All right. What's up?
Two films from my childhood, raised on Channel 32 in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
The first one, a couple of knockoff Frankenstein movies. First one's from Japan called Frankenstein Conquers the World.
Yeah, that's a classic. That is a classic B-movie, no question about it.
And the second one is similar to it, but it was Frankenstein versus the Space Monster.
Yeah, man, I haven't seen that one in a long time.
Right. I haven't seen it in probably 40 years or
yeah,
more.
Yeah, it's been a long, long time since I've seen that one. But yeah, those are classic. Those are the old school. Yep. Those are old school B movies, Thomas.
Right, Channel 32 special.
You got it, man. All right, have a good morning, buddy.
All right, thanks.
Okay, take care. Here's Jim on WGN. Hi, Jim. Jim?
Hello?
Yeah, are you there?
Yeah, hi.
Okay, what do you got?
I'm in North Aurora.
Okay. Do you have a cult movie that you wanted to talk about, Jim?
Yeah. Okay. I wanted to mention the movie Return of the Vampire.
Oh, Return of the Vampire. Yes. Another old school classic, Return of the Vampire. That's another one that had been shown several times on your UHF channels back when we had UHF channels. All right, Jim, thanks. Speaking of UHF, I'm assuming you've seen UHF like 9,000 times, right?
You get to drink from the fire hose.
Anything involving Weird Al is genius.
What was that kid trying? What game was he trying to play? Find like a key and a thing of oatmeal.
Yeah.
You get to drink from the fire hose.
Boom. Yeah.
Was that Michael Richards?
Michael Richards. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, Michael Richards. Pre Seinfeld. Michael Richards. All right. Here's Ike on WGN. Hey, Ike.
Hey, Nick. How's it going with you, man?
All right.
Okay, I have a very, very interesting one that's talked about left sometimes, brought up sometimes, but this was kind of like a Halloween ripoff. It was very silly. They were trying to do like a Halloween ripoff, but what if, and what's strange is that the star was Chuck Norris, Silent Rage.
Oh, I love that movie. I love that movie. Silent Rage is like a combination, like you said, Ike, it's a combination slasher movie, Chuck Norris action movie.
You thought they were going with the Mike Myers thing. Yeah.
I loved it. The Silent Rage is one of my favorite Chuck Norris movies. It really is one of my favorite Chuck Norris movies. And I saw it a bunch of times when it came out. It came out in 1981. That's a true classic Chuck Norris movie. Good choice.
Absolutely. And the theme song is very creepy. It's very memorable and creepy. If you remember the theme song.
Yeah. I don't really remember it, because I haven't seen that movie in years. I used to have it on VHS, but I haven't seen it in years. So, all right, Ike, thanks, buddy.
No problem.
All right, take care. Silent Rage, man. Chuck Norris. Oh man, yeah, I think that's a great movie. Have you ever seen that one, Tom? Silent Rage, the slasher movie with Chuck Norris.
I gotta say, in terms of Chuck Norris movies, I am woefully undereducated. Yeah, there was not a lot of Chuck Norris in my house.
And there's a
Charlie Bronson. Yes.
But Chuck Norris, man, there's some great ones out there. Silent Rage is a really, it's a low budget, it's a goofy ass movie, but it's a really sort of interesting combination of genre of slasher movie, because it was 1981 and there was nothing but slasher movies in theaters. So they thought, okay, we'll make a slasher movie, but we'll have Chuck Norris. Speaking of Chuck Norris, there's a fantastic exchange of dialogue in Perpetual Grace Limited about Walker, Texas Ranger and Chuck Norris with Terry O'Quinn and Jimmy Simpson. That show, by the way, rules. Everything about it rules. Not
Walker,
just,
Texas Ranger?
No. Perpetual Grace. Perpetual Grace Limited on Epics. Not just because my future ex-wife, the lovely Dana DiLorenzo, is in it, but because it's great.
I mean, everybody's batting 100 in that show. It's insane.
And the writing is unbelievable. Stephen Conrad is such a unique, weird writer. You know what I mean? Like, it's a weird show. It's also really funny. Like, really funny and really dark and noir and twisted. It's great. It's great. And not just because my future ex-wife's in it. Okay. That helps, though. That helps a lot. Okay, let's take a break here. When we come back, we got more. I want to talk about cult horror movies and B-movies in celebration of having a great conversation earlier with Joe Bob Briggs right here on WGN. Crowded House was good, man. They were good. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, 2 for Tuesday. Give me a 2 for Tuesday. Yeah. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Okay, in honor of our great visit with the great Joe Bob Briggs coming to town on June 18th, Music Box Theater, be there. We are talking about, from an article about whatculture.com, cult horror movies that you should see before you die. These aren't the real popular ones. These are the ones that have that cult following. So we've opened it up a little bit to talk about B-movies and drive-in movies and movies that are culty movies. Texts have come in. And if you want to call us or text us, it's 312-981-7200. The 724 area code says The Creeping Terror. Creeping Terror, it's legendary because the great Peter Cushing is in it. Phantasm, which of course is one of my favorite movies of all time. Saw Phantasm in the theater summer of 1979 over 100 times. And of course, Race with the Devil. One of the greatest movies. Tom, have you seen? Tell me you've seen Race with the Devil.
Yeah, I have seen Race with the Devil.
That is, I mean, that's a landmark B-70s movie. Because it's like a horror movie, but it's also got insane stunts and car chases and Winnebago's flying around. And it's Warren Oates and Peter Fonda.
Yeah, that got me into car, like kind of like automobile B movies.
Oh well, that's one of the best ones ever.
Well, and especially Peter Fonda because he's in Crazy Larry, Dirty Mary.
That's right.
And there was another one that they did together that I can't or that Peter Fonda was in that I was really into. But Crazy Mary, Dirty Larry was awesome,
fantastic. It's got one of the greatest endings ever. Nothing's going to stop us now. train might. But Race with the Devil also has a fantastic ending.
It does. Maybe that's why I like Death Proof so much.
Yeah, probably. Well, I mean, Death Proof is a salute.
It's a total salute to that.
But Race with the Devil, man, I saw that movie. I was about 12 when that came out. I saw it like 800 times. I have it at home. I watch it. I've watched it. I love Race with the Devil. If you guys have not seen Race with the Devil, it is one of the quintessential B-genre car movies of the 70s and combination horror. And it's got character actors, got some of the best character actors in supporting roles. Loretta Swit, I can't remember who played Peter Fonda's wife. Oh, now I feel bad. I'm blanking on her name.
Is it Laura Parker?
No, is it?
Let's see.
Maybe it is. But it's like Loretta Swit, Warren Oates, Peter Fonda, and then whoever plays Peter Fonda's wife. And they... They're two couples. They're going on a vacation in a Winnebago, and they actually witness a satanic sacrifice where this group of Satanists are performing a ritual across, like, the river from them, and they witness them murder. And then for the rest of the movie, it's a bunch of Satanists chasing them around.
It is Laura Parker.
Okay.
She was on Dark Shadows, right?
That's her. Yeah. Okay, that's her. Race with the Devil, man. If you've not seen Race with the Devil, legendary. 847 area code, Night of the Comet. We had the cast of Night of the Comet at Flashback a few years back. 309 area code says, I Spit on Your Grave, which is a must. We talked about that movie with Joe Bob Briggs.
I don't think I've ever finished watching that movie.
It's not an easy movie to finish.
That and Last House on the Left really are just...
Yeah, yeah. They both feel real grimy. I love Last House on the Left.
Yeah. I would say I actually enjoyed that. I Spit on Your Grave, I had a hard time saying that I even enjoyed.
Yeah.
And I'd love to hear Joe Bob talk about
it. It's brilliant.
Because...
It's brilliant, man.
He saw something in that movie that I did not see.
And he did the whole movie. He did commentary for watching the whole movie at Flashback like 10, 12 years ago. And it was brilliant. It was really insightful. He's brilliant. And he's also very funny. So the first one that whatculture.com brings up is Night of the Creeps, which is a legendary movie that we are having at Flashback, a massive reunion with like everybody who's in it. This is a classic B movie that was, I never saw it in the big screen. I saw it VHS. That's how I saw it. I think it went straight to VHS. But it has since garnered a massive reputation and a cult following.
Are you a fan of Slither?
I love Slither.
Which is kind of like its own riff on Night of the Creeps.
I love
Slither. A little southern flavor.
James Gunn, man. And that was a woefully underrated movie, Slither. That thing tanked.
Oh, if you get the Blu-ray now, it says, from the director of Guardians of the Galaxy.
It does, yeah.
I'm like, I don't know.
And Michael Rooker rules in it, by the way. Everybody does. I love that movie. Okay, we got a break. And it's time to talk B-movies, cult movies, horror movies, all that stuff that Joe Bob Briggs likes to talk about. And that'll be happening after the news, which is next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran has your morning drive at 6 a.m. It's Tuesday. That means it's 2 for Tuesday, man. Yeah, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All right, who requested that?
That was Tom. Wanted to hear a little Clapton there.
Okay.
Let It Rain.
All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. We had a fun interview with Joe Bob Briggs earlier during the show, and if you weren't around to hear it, it'll be podcast in the morning, so, and I suggest that you listen to it because Joe Bob Briggs is just, you know, brilliant and so much fun. Anyway, you know, he specializes in B-movies and cult movies and drive-in movies, and we thought we would celebrate that by talking about some of the great cult horror movies that you must see before you die. And we just mentioned Night of the Creeps, which is a movie directed by Fred Decker, who will be at our Flashback convention along with, like, most of the cast, including the great Tom Atkins. It's one of those movies that kind of, you know, I remember my buddies and I saw the video box, the art for it, because it's got great artwork.
Is it him in the prom?
The tux, and so we saw that, and we were like, well, let's get the, and we saw that Tom Atkins was in it, you know, because Tom Atkins is the king. And so we were like, all right, let's watch this. We brought it back to my buddy. We brought it back to, hey, listen, my friend Joe. We brought it back to his house and we watched it, and we were so impressed. I was like, how the hell is this not in the movie theaters? How did this movie not make it on the big screen? And it has since, obviously, has an enormous cult following. And people are very excited about the Flashback in August because of the Night of the Creeps reunion. So, and I just think that's, I think it's great. And, of course, Tom Atkins. The good news is your dates are here. The bad news is they're dead. It's one of the greatest lines in B-movie history.
I hope I could get that chiseled on my grave.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, so we're talking about cult horror movies and B-movies and drive-in movies, and here's Tom on WGN. Hi, Tom.
How you doing, Nick?
All right, what's up?
I got a great B-movie, Carnival of Souls.
That's a legitimately creepy movie.
I was going to say, even though it looks like it's made by a college film class, it only adds to it.
You know, the thing about it is that movie, you know, it's a very good companion piece to Night of the Living Dead, to the original Night of the Living Dead.
That's what it looks like.
Very similar in terms of the way it's shot. It's in black and white. It has a very similar look to it and a very similar feel. Carnival of Souls is a great movie. I really think it's terrific. That's a good choice. Yeah. All right, Tom.
Okay.
Thanks, buddy. Take care.
All right, bye.
Yeah, Carnival of Souls, man. That's a genuinely creepy movie. I remember they gave that movie a really great re-release. I want to say it was in the early 90s. They re-released it in theaters, and it played at the Fine Arts Theater, which no longer exists. And it played for a couple of weeks at the Fine Arts Theater. You know, so it's like, in one theater, you can see Howard's End, and the next one, you could see Carnival of Souls. So, all right, here's a legendary one, which has one of the greatest horror movie posters of all time. And that's Happy Birthday to Me, which is a ridiculous movie. But the poster, you know the poster, right, Tom?
Yeah, is it, because I distinctly remember it seeing on a VHS case.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was the same poster, but is it the kid getting the shish kebab?
Shish kebab. Yep, yep. Shish kebab in the throat.
Whew.
That's the poster for it. And she does stick a shish kebab in a guy's throat and kills him in the movie. It's funny because it was Melissa Sue Anderson was the star of that movie, and she was best known for Little House on the Prairie. So here she is in this early 80s ridiculous, gory, stupid slasher movie where she's sticking shish kebabs down guys' throats and stuff. I just love that that's the poster.
I don't know what else is supposed to get you into the movie.
I don't know, man. Part of the holiday theme cycle of slasher films inspired by the success of John Carpenter's Halloween, Happy Birthday to Me is a classic whodunit injected with heaping helping of gore and an atypical, mostly male victim roster. At the snobby Crawford Academy, Virginia's group of friends starts to go missing after horrible events that happened to her as a child around her birthday. At face value, you'd be forgiven for expecting the obvious. By this time, the film was released, and we were already had Friday the 13th, Graduation Day, My Bloody Valentine, and all of those. They really enjoyed this movie. There's a lot of really, there's also like a brain surgery scene in the middle of the movie that's really gross. Glenn Ford is in it for some unknown reason. Glenn Ford? So next one that they mentioned here, Night of the Demons. This movie rules. Night of the Demons rules. I'm assuming you've seen Night of the Demons.
No, you assumed wrong.
No,
I have not seen Night of the Demons.
Oh man,
this is why video stores need to come back. That's how I used to find everything.
Oh my god, Night of the Demons. Have you seen the poster work for it? Because it's one of the great. It's one of the best like B movie horror posters of all time.
Let me look at. I'm gonna come look.
Night
at it
of the
right
Demons.
Now.
It's just fantastic. Despite being a little hokey and silly, and by today's PC standards, could be considered completely racist, sexist, misogynistic by uptight people, it is actually pretty damn awesome. It was made at a time when monsters were created with makeup, matte paintings, and used backdrops, and the slut characters in this case, of course, Scream Queen Linnea Quigley. Come on, man. You got to see Linnea Quigley's in it.
So I think I'm looking at the right one. Angela is having a party. Yep. Jason and Freddy are too scared to come, but you'll have a hell of a time.
That's it. And Linnea Quigley, man. Legend. Legend. Now, you know who Linnea Quigley is, obviously.
I do, yeah.
Okay. I mean, just from Return of the Living Dead alone. Mm-hmm. She's in a ton of those movies, but she's in Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Yep.
She's the one who gets put on the antlers, where Santa hangs her on the antlers, and she's topless, of course, because Linnea Quigley was topless in every single movie that she did. Met her several times, sweetheart. How about this? The Tokyo Gore Police
This is a big one for me.
Is that right?
Yeah, because every year, starting in middle school, me and my friends would go to, this is way before C2E2, we would go to Wizard World, which is still around.
Yeah.
And our goal, like, obviously we wanted to get comic books and stuff. We weren't really even interested in the personalities because we were too shy. But we always wanted to find, like, the craziest DVD that we could. Like, and we would have a competition. We would all split off, go to different booths, and try to find the craziest movie that we could. And we go home and watch it.
Yeah.
And picked up Tokyo Gore Police. It was 2008, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, picked that one up. I won that year.
Yeah, well, it's insane. Yeah. It's a completely insane movie.
Runner-up was The Machine Girl, if you've ever seen that.
No, I've not seen that one.
It's a Japanese one where a girl gets her arm cut off. It's a little bit like Planet Terror, but a girl gets her arm cut off, and they replace it with a giant machine gun. And there's like a drill bra and everything. It's crazy.
Now, is that pre or po? Oh, no, that would be pre Planet Terror then, right?
Yeah, it came out before Planet Terror, and people accused Planet Terror of copying the idea.
I wouldn't be surprised, Robert Rodriguez. got some great texts coming in. We were talking about B cult horror movies and B movies in general in honor of our conversation with Joe Bob Briggs. Sean in Indy says, how about Toxic Avenger? Well, yeah, it has to be considered a cult classic. Love them for some reason. How many did they make? How many Toxic Avengers did they make?
At least four.
At least.
There was at least four. I think they're trying to bring it back, too.
Didn't they do a kid's cartoon with Toxic Avenger?
That they did.
I love that like Toxic Avenger, they made a kid's cartoon. They also made a kid's cartoon out of RoboCop, which is one of the most violent movies ever made.
Yeah, there were four, because you've got...
you got The Last Temptation of Toxie. I just remember that being the subtitle of one of them.
Yeah, this is Toxic Avenger Part 3.
The Last Temptation of Toxie.
And then Citizen Toxie, the Toxic Avenger 4.
Well, you know, Lloyd Kaufman, who, by the way, is a really brilliant guy, Lloyd Kaufman, like a really brilliant guy. And the Troma people, I mean, they just churn them out. They still do. Lloyd Kaufman's been on the show a couple of times. He's actually a really brilliant guy.
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah.
They're geniuses, but they're off their heads.
They're nuts. Like, they're nuts. And like when Lloyd Kaufman shows up at a convention, like he's been to Flashback a few times, he brings the whole cast of characters with him. You get your Toxie, you get all of the movies that they've made, all the characters in full costume. He hires like local actors to put the costumes on and just walk around the convention handing out flyers. Um, 773 area code says, and Hot Rods to Hell and She-Devils on Wheels. They always played Hot Rods to Hell right after Creature Features in the mid-70s. 708 area code says, what did you think of the 2010 remake of I Spit on Your Grave? Hated it. 815 area code says, The Edge of Tomorrow, very scary movie, Emily Blunt and Tom Cruise. The monster is so wicked. Well, see, now this one doesn't really fall into the category that we're talking about. Because... What? The Edge of Tomorrow is a big budget Hollywood movie that flopped. It's not a
but it has a cult following.
Oh, it's a great movie.
It's an amazing movie.
Don't get me wrong. I love Edge of Tomorrow. I think it's a great movie and woefully underappreciated. But like, you know, we're talking about like these, you know, like a movie like, you know, Hot Rods to Hell is a little different than a big budget Tom Cruise, Emily Blunt movie.
I'm going to throw a point into Edge of Tomorrow's category, you know, on their side, because like what Joe Bob said, like even stuff that's kind of cult now looks slick because it's easy to do.
Yeah.
And granted, yeah, this had a huge budget, but it's one of those modern cult movies that's a little bit different.
No, it's got a cult following. There's no question about it. And it was one of those movies that unfortunately was discovered after it bombed at the box office. It's a terrific movie. I mean, again, it's Groundhog Day. Like, you know, they've made Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day's, you know, the Happy Death Day. They did two of those.
Yeah.
There was another one. God, I can't remember the other one that they did. They've made the movie Groundhog Day like five times.
And, which is kind of ironic.
And yeah. And Edge of Tomorrow is Groundhog Day. It's a sci-fi version of Groundhog Day, and it's awesome.
Everything you could have expected.
Oh, I love that movie. I love Edge of Tomorrow. I think it's terrific. So All right, let's take a break here, and then we'll come back, and we've got more of the cult horror movies to get into, B-movies and cult movies in general, drive-in movies, in honor of the great Joe Bob Briggs. Had so much fun talking to him earlier. And again, that podcast is going to be up early in the morning, tomorrow morning, or I should say this morning, later. So 312-981-7200 for talk and text, and more B-movies and cult horror movies coming up. How's everybody doing? Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. During the break, I was perusing the interwebs and discovered, speaking of cult movies, and discovered that, and I didn't know this, that John Turturro has made a spinoff of The Big Lebowski where he plays the Jesus. I had no idea. He just finished it. Bobby Cannavale is in it. Audrey Tautou. A full blessing from the Coen brothers, directed by Turturro. It's called Going Places.
I think it's been sitting around for a while, though.
Oh, man.
It's taken him a while.
I'm all for it, man. I'm all for it. Eight-year-olds, dude. Oh, man. Okay, I just didn't know that. That was just that was a nice piece of news that I just got, man. Yeah. There's going to be a Jesus spinoff from The Big Lebowski.
I just don't know where it's going to go in terms
of... No idea.
Because is it just going to be about him being a convicted pedophile?
I have no idea.
It's so weird.
I don't know. But how is that guy going to maintain main character status? I mean, that's... to say that I'm excited and intrigued is an understatement. Let me just say that. All right, cult movies and cult horror movies is the topic. Drive-in stuff, too, because of the great Joe Bob Briggs, who, again, June 18th, Music Box Theater, be there for the History of the Redneck. So there you go. Here's James on WGN. Hi, James.
Morning, Nick. How are you doing this
All
morning?
Right, all right. What's up?
I don't, like I was telling you, screener, I didn't know if anybody mentioned it, but Death Race 2000.
Nobody's mentioned it yet, but it's an absolute classic.
Yes, yes, yes. And then they did do some remakes.
They did.
So, with Jason
Statham. Yeah, no, there's no need for that. You got the original, man. That's all you need.
Yeah, exactly.
David Carradine, and it's one of Stallone's first movies. Stallone is in that movie, too.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Does any of the Bruce Lee movies fall into that category?
I would say, the ones that he... I think the few that he made before Enter the Dragon, because Enter the Dragon was a certified smash and was mainstream. But stuff like The Chinese Connection, that would probably be considered...
Fist of Fury,
yeah. Those would be considered, I think... B movies, yeah.
All
right, James, thanks, man.
Have a good day.
Okay, take care. The dude that they have playing Bruce Lee, that Tarantino has playing Bruce, looks exactly like him.
It's shocking.
It's incredible. Mm. And talks exactly like him.
And I gotta throw this in here. I think the Death Race remake with Jason Statham was pretty good.
Oh,
all things considered. Cards on the table.
Oh, no. No.
I had a great time watching it. Was that Paul W.S. Anderson?
It was.
Which... I have a weird affinity for him, even though I know
he's
terrible.
He's the wrong Paul Anderson to like.
why not both, man? Why can't we live harmoniously?
The Paul W.S. Anderson movies suck. He did one. He did Event Horizon, didn't he? Did he do?
I'll have to check.
Because Event Horizon rules. So I don't know. I don't remember, but I think he did Event Horizon. All of those Resident Evil movies suck.
He did do Event Horizon.
Okay, so he's got that one. I'll give him that one.
Give him Event Horizon.
Yeah, because that's a really crazy movie. Event Horizon is a crazy movie.
Yeah, that's one where it's just hell on a spaceship.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And Sam Neill?
Yeah. I remember going into that movie going, oh, God, because his name was on it. And it was a science fiction movie, and I'm like, oh, God. had no idea it was going to be as terrifying and brutal as it was. I think Event Horizon's great. I really enjoy that movie.
Only a couple years after In the Mouth of Madness as well.
Yeah.
Which is
also
rad.
My great movie. How about Society from 1989? And it's Brian Usna directed it, who is, you know, partners with Stuart Gordon. Stuart Gordon classic Reanimator.
Yeah, Reanimator, From Beyond.
Yeah, From Beyond. Well, that's Stuart Gordon, but Brian Usna went on to direct a couple of Reanimator sequels.
Bride of Reanimator.
Yeah, which is a good movie. I don't care what anybody says. But Society is a crazy movie. Have you ever seen Society?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It is a crazy movie. Some films are immediately resonant and manage to be even more so as time goes by and people continue to properly contextualize them. Brian Usna's directorial debut, Society, is one such film. When it was initially released, it was a clear reaction against 80s excess and yuppie culture. However, in the wake of 23 years' worth of unrest over wealth and inequality, it's tough to hear about a film that rich have always fed the poor and not consider it to be eerily prescient, but also delightful since it literalizes that insistence in an outrageously bizarre manner. Yeah, it's disgusting, too.
That's bonkers.
It's a crazy movie. Here's Bernie on WGN. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, guys. Hi. How about The Boogans, the original from the 60s, 2000 Maniacs, and My Bloody Valentine?
Yeah, classic. 2000 Maniacs is a classic, again.
The first one. The second one was horrible.
Yeah, well, Herschel Gordon Lewis. Another genius, Herschel Gordon Lewis, who made a lot of crazy movies. But, All right, Bernie, thanks.
Sure, bye.
Yep, there you go. Herschel Gordon Lewis. Another guy who makes those kind of crazy movies, but he's actually brilliant. I've interviewed Herschel Gordon Lewis a few times, and the guy's like a genius. All right. We're celebrating the world of crazy cult horror movies and B-movies and drive-in movies, continuing the theme from when we were talking with the great Joe Bob Briggs a little bit earlier and celebrating that. So if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for Talk and Text. Love this song. Was that Ike again?
It was not. Everybody gets one. Everybody gets one.
That's right. Who requested the NXS?
That was Steve. Wanted to hear some. Did you ever watch the show Rockstar NXS?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Man.
Yeah, I did. I love NXS.
Yeah,
I love them.
And, that was a great show too.
It was fun. I think that Michael Hutchins was one of the best frontmen ever.
Lovely guy.
I love that band. I think that band is great. Shabu Shaba is one of my favorite albums. I love that record. Well, okay, so we get to hear two NXS songs on 2 for Tuesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We had a lovely conversation with the great Joe Bob Briggs, who's coming to town once again to the Music Box Theater for his Redneck show that you can see on June 18th. And I highly suggest that you go. Incredibly entertaining guy. And he, of course, is the drive-in king, the master of the B-movie, the cult movie, and that's what we're talking about. Cult horror movies, maybe we can turn you on to a few here, or some B-movies in general. Here's Dave on WGN. Hi, Dave.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
So I got The Gates of Hell and Spaces of Death.
Well, okay, yeah, the Gates of Hell... You could pretty much go with any of those directors' movies. Lucio Fulci, notorious, crazy Italian director, and Gates of Hell is one of his best. But he, you know, you've got The Beyond, you've got Zombie. Fulci is just in a world all its own, his own. Manhattan Ripper, which is an insane movie. Gates of Hell. I remember when the classic scene in Gates of Hell is when the woman just throws up her entire intestine. it goes yeah. in, and the scene goes on for like 5 minutes. It's just her going with like intestines pouring out of her mouth and blood shooting out of her eyes, and that's the kind of subtlety. That's the kind of subtlety you get in Fulci's work.
So, that was crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
And what really stood out to me as a teenager, with the whole VHS, you know, to your point, with these B movies coming out, was the Faces of Death.
Right.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, there was a big surge in the popularity of video nasties, and they were led by how popular Faces of Death was. Faces of Death purported to have real footage of real people being killed or dying. And much of it was fake. It wasn't, you know, much of it was fake. And there were a couple of real pieces of footage in there, but most of it was not real. But it got this notorious reputation in the video stores, and they released like 5 or 6 Faces of Death because they were really cheap to do and really easy to make. And whatever that company was, I can't remember the company who released the Faces of Death movies, but whoever that company was made a boatload of money on those movies. Because they would rent constantly. There would be like half a wall, a couple of shelves of Faces of Death movies in the in your video stores. So, hey Dave, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. Okay,
thank you.
All right, buddy, take care. Bye. All right, let's see. 708 area code says Swamp Thing. Yes, Wes Craven's Swamp Thing, which is not a great movie, but Adrian Barbeau is in it, so therefore it's watchable. But I was interested in watching the Swamp Thing remake. That lasted 2 minutes. They can't DC Universe, and our good friend Dan Feinberg reviewed it, and they canceled it after one episode. They canceled the big reboot of Swamp Thing after one episode. So, but the movie from the 80s is really goofy. And like I said, you know, the makeup effects are kind of fun, and Adrian Barbeau is in it. So that gives it, it gets a pass because Adrian Barbeau is in it. That's how it works. I told you that, like, during one of my Q&As with John Carpenter, some idiot in the audience said, "Hey, why did you divorce Adrian Barbeau?"
So mean.
And I was like, shut up. What's wrong with you?
He said,
why don't you ask her? I mean, he had a good sense of humor about it because he's Carpenter, you know.
He doesn't care. But at the same time, leave it.
Oh, you don't ask that kind of question.
Yeah. What was it that George Carlin said? Here's another group of people that deserve to be beaten with a bag of hammers.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, you know, when it's. It's one of these things, as soon as I open up the Q&A to the crowd, you're taking a chance. Because I do like five, six Q&As a year at the Flashback Convention over the course of a couple of days. By the way, I'm doing the Evil Dead one.
Whoop, whoop.
With Sam, Ted, and Bruce.
That's going to be something
it's gonna
else.
Be ridiculous.
It's
going to
be insane.
It's going to be ridiculous. I've done Q&As with Bruce before, and Ted. But obviously never with Sam, because Sam's never been...
The Sam Raimi. Yeah. Mm.
Director of The Gift. It's a movie I like. I'll tell you what's one of his best movies. Simple Plan.
Simple Plan's great.
One of his best movies. And I mean, I know it's not a genre, you know, film or sci-fi, but it's a phenomenal movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, listen, man, you know what movie that I get tired of defending that Raimi directed? And not Spider-Man 3, because Spider-Man 3... is not good. Drag Me to Hell.
Oh yeah, 10 years this year.
Drag Me to Hell is a great movie.
You know, I was actually I should have brought it up to you. I was like scrolling through that Facebook memories thing, and I saw old statuses of 10 years ago, and I was like, "Hey, going to see Drag Me to Hell tonight?"
Yeah.
Oh, I nearly wet myself. I was having so much fun.
It is a great movie, and I love how he got around getting a heavier rating on it because he just changed the bodily fluid color.
Yeah.
That's all he did.
If he hadn't done that, I wouldn't have gotten to see that movie.
Yeah. I love that movie. I think it's really good. Jay says, "Hey, Nick, the movies The Manster and The Claw are embedded in my memory as monster movies. I also liked Hot Rods to Hell, too. I watched these movies on UHF Channel 32 on Saturday afternoon with my mom." Yeah, that's when they showed them. Godzilla movies, too. Godzilla movies were on Saturday afternoons on Channel 32. 773 area code says a slasher movie that I saw in the early 80s that never gets mentioned is a movie called Maniac. No, Maniac gets mentioned quite frequently. that's a notorious movie. Joe Spinell, William Lustig directed it. Savini's makeup effects. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see the remake with Elijah Wood?
I loved it.
Yeah,
I loved it. Maniac is a, I can see why people are disgusted and hate that movie. I can totally see it. But there's something about it.
it's endured really, this long.
There's really something about it. And it's also part of this article. They mentioned Maniac in this thing. But I remember when it came out in 1980. And the poster for it was like, you don't see, it's like a painting, a drawing of what is supposed to be Joe Spinell with a decapitated head in his hand and a big bloody knife. And it says, the tagline is, "I told you not to go out tonight." That was the tagline for the movie. And it caused, that movie is notorious. It caused quite a stir. But there's something about it, man. I don't know what it is. I've seen it more than once. And by the way, the effects are amazing. Like Savini's effects are unbelievable. Speaking of Savini's effects, the next one here on the list at What Culture is The Burning, which is a fantastic movie. And The Burning was made at the height of the low budget slasher phase. And it was a total ripoff of Friday the 13th. It was like a camp movie, but Savini, Tom Savini, turned down Friday the 13th Part 2 to do The Burning, and it's some of the best makeup effects that Savini's ever done, and really gross, really gross.
And it was also it was the first feature film from Miramax and Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, and it was also severely cut. It's very difficult to find the uncut version of that movie. Unless they did a Blu-ray release of it, I'm not sure. But I know that when it was released, they cut the hell out of that movie. Yeah. The Burning was notoriously cut. Do we have weather?
Yes, one moment.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
It's here.
And then next here is the Beyond, which we mentioned, Gates of Hell. Fulci, man. Well, I mean, Fulci. That's all you need, Lucio Fulci. And The Beyond is an amazing movie. It's truly amazing. And he's made, you know, this one goes like, Fulci goes like sort of beyond, no pun intended, you know, the Italian horror director, kind of a subgenre, like your Argentos, like Dario Argento and Bava and those guys. But Fulci's in a land all on his. He's just in another world. He's in another world, man.
Yeah. I thought like A Bay of Blood was crazy.
Yeah.
And then I watched some Fulci and I was like, nope.
Yeah, no. The first Fulci movie that I ever distinctly remember seeing was Zombie, which is phenomenal and has that insane. And I am not a fan. You know, I can watch pretty much anything violence related. I'm kind of desensitized to it, considering, you know, I saw The Exorcist at 8, so I'm pretty desensitized by that kind of stuff and violence and stuff. I have an issue with, like, eye violence. Like, I don't like eye violence. It makes me, that's the only thing that makes me kind of close my eyes and kind of look away from a screen is eye violence.
I'm guessing that bit in John Wick 3 was a little bit tough for you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, it was funny, though. It was funny as hell. But, like, have you seen the movie Dead and Buried?
Yeah.
Okay, one of my favorite movies. Gary Sherman from Chicago, God bless him. James Ferrantino, fantastic. There's a scene in that movie where there's a burn victim because the townspeople are it's a zombie movie. And Jack Albertson from Chico and the Man plays a mortician who brings people back to life, rebuilds their bodies after accidents and stuff. That's got a great surprise ending. Dead and Buried's got a great ending. The first time I saw it, I was like, what? But there's a scene in the movie where this guy has been burned by the zombie townspeople, and he's covered head to toe in bandages. Like, his whole face is covered, except his left eye. Everything else is covered in bandages. All you see is his left eye, and the zombie nurse comes in, sticks a hypodermic needle in it. I was like, thank you. I appreciate that. That's
cool.
But the reason I bring up the eye violence thing is because a zombie, the notorious scene in Zombie, where the zombie's on the other side of the door, and there's that jagged piece of wood, and the zombie grabs the girl by the back of the head and slowly slides her eye into the wood, and it goes on for like 3 minutes. I remember, like, not going, oh, and the makeup effects are fantastic, but it's just, I remember sitting in the theater going, what in God's name is? I saw that at the Luna, same theater that showed I Spit on Your Grave. The Luna was a great, you know, here's a little thing about the Luna Theater, Tom. Luna Theater was notorious, okay? It was at Belmont, just east of Cicero. Belmont, just east of Cicero. That's where it was located. And here's the thing about the Luna. They show double features, usually crappy movies, usually B-movies or horror movies. Very, 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 very rarely would they get first run. They were a genre house. And the theater had been around a while, so that wasn't in that great shape. But here's the thing that was distinctive about the Luna Theater and the thing that made the Luna Theater insane. Are you ready for this? They did not have doors in the back of the auditorium. They had curtains. So you could hear what was going on in the lobby. If you were sitting, like, you'd have to sit very close. But they had curtains. They never had doors. Never had doors in the theater. Always curtains. And then, like, in the 80s when they were put video games or pinball machines, you hear ding, 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 ding in the background while you're trying to watch the damn movie. The Luna. We used to call it the Lunatic Theater.
I mean...
Yeah. No, no doors. Curtains.
No doors.
You hear the popcorn machine. You know,
just got used to it, I guess.
Yeah. But they didn't show movies where the dialogue was very important, so I guess that's one thing. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. And Steve Grzanich has the opening bell coming up at 5 and coming up the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. So there you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We've been talking about cult horror movies and B-movies in honor of our fun visit with the great Joe Bob Briggs. We were talking about some of the insane movies that Lucia Fulci made. We were talking specifically about The Beyond, which is a crazy movie and a great movie, too. Here's one that I really love and was barely seen. It freaked me out when I saw it. It came out in 1976, and it is listed here in the cult horror movies that you should see before you die from whatculture.com. Alice, Sweet Alice. You ever seen Alice, Sweet Alice?
Have not.
Oh, dude. Brooke Shields' first movie.
Really?
She's like 12 in it.
Jeez.
Yeah.
It's a B movie.
Horror movie.
Horror movie. Ooh.
It's also known, it goes by two names. It's Alice, Sweet Alice, and it's also known as Communion. But it's not Communion with Christopher Walken and Alien Probes. This is completely different. It's a really, really deeply creepy movie. Here's what they say about it. It's generally a bit of a taboo in a film to combine children with murder. Usually that means filmmakers are wary of killing a kid in the movie. That's crossing the line, but it also works the other way. Alice, Sweet Alice isn't scared of such taboos. Not only does it include a child being killed mere minutes into the running time, its entire plot revolves around the notion that another child may be the one doing the killing. The child in question is the titular Alice, a badly behaved 12-year-old girl who constantly bullies her younger sister, Karen. With her parents divorced and her dad out of town, it's perhaps understandable that Alice isn't getting along with her sister or her mother. It's not long, however, before things go seriously out of control. Film historians will likely recall Alice, Sweet Alice as Brooke Shields' first movie, a distinction that often overshadows director Alfred Soule's film itself. A future A-lister aside, Alice, Sweet Alice is one of the creepiest movies in our article, and a lot to do with the killer's grinning mask. Yeah, by the way, one of the creepiest masks in movie history, Alice, Sweet Alice. She's got a little rain slicker on, like a yellow rain slicker, with her hood up, and she's wearing this creepy-ass mask. And that was on the poster. Like, the poster had a bloody knife and the mask. Like, that was the poster, Alice, Sweet Alice. And it was they broke every kind of taboo with this movie. Like, it's a really genuinely creepy movie. And there's a guy who weighs like 400 pounds, who lives like in the apartment building where she's terrorizing him, and he eats cat food, and he's bald, and he's got a bunch of cats. It's just like it's a really unnerving movie, like a really, really unnerving and a damn creepy one. So yeah, you've never seen this one, right?
No. I'm not sure if I want to.
Actress, the girl who played Alice in it, I can't remember her name, but she went on, did some other movies, and then I saw her. I remember seeing her in a movie as an adult. And still, she had that same like look.
Mm-hmm. Let's see the cast here.
Does it say who played Alice?
Alice Spages, right, is her name?
Yeah.
Paula Shepherd.
That's it, Paula Shepherd. Paula Shepherd would go on, I think, if I remember correctly, I hadn't seen her in years. Like, she did, she's really good and creepy and scary as the little kid in the movie, mm-hmm. as a 12-year-old girl. But she went on to do some adult stuff, and if I remember correctly, she's in Liquid Sky. Like, she's, mm-hmm. She's not the lead. She's the other girl in Liquid Sky. But yeah, no, Alice, Sweet Alice, it goes by two different names, because sometimes it was referred to as Communion, and sometimes it's referred to as Alice, Sweet Alice.
Now, did you know it premiered at the Chicago International Film Festival under its original title of Communion in November of 1976, premiered here.
Wow, I didn't know it premiered here.
Yeah.
By the way, so did Halloween. I would just like to thank the Chicago International Film Festival.
Really?
Oh yeah, Halloween premiered here.
Did not know that.
Yeah. 1978. Yeah. And that's
good
where the,
job, guys.
That's where the buzz. That's where the buzz came from. That's how it, you know, like, because the reviews at the Chicago International Film Festival were so unbelievably strong, you know, that's how it got distributed across the country.
Yeah, and Paula Shepherd is Adrian in Liquid Sky.
That's what I thought. And I remember seeing Liquid Sky, and this is years later. This is like probably 8-9 years later. And I remember seeing her and going, "Oh my God, that's Alice from Alice, Sweet Alice."
Oh my gosh. It's one of only two credits.
Yeah.
Alice, Sweet Alice, and Liquid Sky, and that's
yeah.
it.
Yeah. That makes her more mysterious and creepy, because she's creepy. Yeah. She's creepy in Liquid Sky, too. She's creepy in Liquid Sky, which is a great movie. Liquid Sky. Great movie. Really crazy movie, though. Like, that fits into what we're talking about as an insane cult movie. Liquid Sky fits that bill for sure. 773 area code says, don't forget the Hammer films of the 1970s with Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing. I don't. Peter Cushing is my hero. You know, on my end table in my apartment next to my couch, I have a $195 statue of Peter Cushing.
Wow.
Like a little statue that's about this high.
Is it just him, or is it him in character?
It's him, and he's Van Helsing, and it's at the end of Horror of Dracula when he's got the candlesticks together.
Oh, nice.
When he puts the candlesticks together to make a cross. That's one of my favorite moments in movie history.
See, and I only got introduced to him because of Star Wars.
Well, I know. That's
Grand Moff Tarkin.
Peter Cushing's my hero. When I was a kid, I wanted to be Peter Cushing. Everybody else was like, oh, I want to be a baseball player, an astronaut. I'm like, no, I want to be Van Helsing. I want to be Peter Cushing. I'm not. He's seriously one of my favorite people that's ever walked the planet Earth. I adored Peter Cushing. But yeah. Yeah, no, he was seriously. I know it's weird. It's very strange for like a 6-year-old kid to be obsessed with a proper dignified British guy. But he was my favorite, and he still is. He's still my favorite. I adore. And that thing I bought it at Flashback. I saw the statue. I didn't care. It's like $200, and I was like, I'm buying it.
Give me that.
So one of my favorite moments in movie history is the candlesticks together at the end of Horror of Dracula, which is my favorite version of the Dracula story of any Dracula movie. It's the best. So, all right, we'll take a quick break here. The news is coming up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows this with the opening bell. And at 6 o'clock, it's Steve Cochran for your morning drive. is Two for Tuesday. You have your Two for Tuesday. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Who requested that?
So that was requested by Dave.
Yeah.
Wanted to hear some Elton John, but specifically wanted to hear it from the Rocket Man soundtrack. So that's Elton John and Taron Egerton.
Oh, okay. All right. Very cool. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We've been talking, having a lot of fun this morning, talking about crazy cult horror movies, B-movies, drive-in movies, because we had the great Joe Bob Briggs on earlier this morning, and he was just fantastic. Again, if you missed it, he was on at the top of the show back at a little after 1 o'clock this morning. If you missed it, it will be online and available as a podcast in a few hours. So make sure you listen to it and download it, because it's he's just fantastic. And he's going to be in town June 18th at the Music Box Theater for the Cinepocalypse Fest, and that'll be on June 18th. So we got a ton of texts and a bunch of phone calls that have been coming in, and we're still got this article that was at whatculture.com. And we're talking about B-movies and cult horror classics as well. Here's Dan on WGN. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right.
Hey, if anybody would know this, you would know this. I'm a few years older than you. This movie was about this girl's sister who they always kept chained up in it was either an attic or over a garage, and they just fed her. And she never really seen her till the end of the movie. She killed a couple of people that went upstairs, you know, I guess. But I can't say. I tried looking on the internet. I couldn't find nothing about it. But at the end, the girl finally sees her sister, and she's, like, chained in the attic. They kept her chained her whole life up in the attic. And they kind of just, like, gaze at each other at the end of this movie. And I think it's her husband. Then they just leave. It was either in Europe or on the East Coast somewhere.
Hmm. Is this what year are we talking about?
Probably early 70s.
Early 70s.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of movies about people being kept chained in attics.
Now, can I take a stab at it?
Go ahead, Tom, go ahead.
Is it The Shuttered Room?
That's a great album. Maybe. That's a great album by The Fix, by the way.
it could be.
Yeah, that's from 1967.
Who's in?
Maybe that was it.
Yes.
The whole movie based around, because they kept her, when the girl was at this house, she had moved, I think she had moved away, then she came back with her husband, and because the mother died maybe or something, but then they kept hearing the chains, like in the attic, but they never went up there.
I think that's what it is. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, okay, starring Oliver Reed.
Yeah, Oliver Reed, yep.
Yeah, that was a strange movie at the end, though, about she seen her sister, and she was like some demonic.
Yeah.
Living up there.
Yeah,
all right, I'll look that up on YouTube.
Okay, then. Dan, thanks, buddy.
All right, thanks a lot.
Yeah, man. I haven't seen that one. Oliver Reed's one of my favorites. By the way, did you ever get a copy of Hellraisers?
Hellraisers?
The book?
No.
About Richard Harris, Oliver Reed, Richard Burton, and Peter O'Toole?
No, not yet. It's on the list of many things. I'm working my way through.
Astonishingly entertaining book.
Yeah, I got way too many... like books and oral histories to read.
That is a remarkably entertaining book. The fact that those guys lived as long as they did. Well, some of them died kind of young,
mm-hmm.
like Oliver Reed. Richard Burton was young when he died too, wasn't he? Was he in his 70s?
Richard Burton, let's see.
Because Peter O'Toole was in his 80s when he passed. I think Richard Harris was in his 70s. Oliver Reed was in his 60s, I think. He died on the set. He died on the set of Gladiator.
Yeah, Richard Burton, born 1925, died August 5th, 1984.
Okay, young.
Speaking of Peter O'Toole, there was a joke my dad always used to tell me. He said he would always say, "You know that actor Peter O'Toole, Lawrence of Arabia?" I said, "Yeah." He's like, "Have you ever heard of his brother? Who? Miles?"
Oh boy. 815 area code says, "Hey Nick, I don't know if it's been mentioned, but the giant Gila monster, it came from outer space, and the Blob. Those are all classic. Trilogy of Terror." 815 area code says, "The Entity and the Sentinel." Then Tom, you still haven't seen Trilogy of Terror.
I did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, picked it up, watch it. As you said, the first two segments, I liked them. I thought I was like, yeah, this is all right.
But the third one's awesome.
the dog.
The doll is awesome.
Jesus.
Yeah, the doll is awesome, man. You ever see The Entity with Barbara Hershey?
I have not, no.
And
I have seen The Sentinel, though.
Sentinel's great.
Sentinel's nuts.
Sentinel is an insane movie. Directed by the guy who directed all the Death Wish movies, Michael Winner.
Oh, jeez.
He also directed The Mechanic, which is my favorite Charles Bronson movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my dad's favorite movies of all time, The Mechanic. What, has he got like four lines in that movie?
Yeah.
He doesn't speak for the first 40 minutes of that
oh,
movie.
No.
There's like no dialogue. The first half hour of that movie, there's like no dialogue.
No, no.
Jan Michael Vincent, man. 219 Erica says, I enjoyed the 2007 version of The Hitcher. No, why? No. No, 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 no. Now, if you're talking the 1986 version, the original version of The Hitcher, that movie rules the planet.
Was that Sean Bean?
In the remake, yes. Yeah.
Why?
It's terrible. The first Hitcher is amazing. The original Hitcher is an unbelievable movie. Rutger Hauer is great. C. Thomas Howell, Jennifer Jason Leigh. Unbelievable movie.
That's a pretty who's who of 80s actors.
Yeah.
Or at least, you know, kind of. C. Thomas Howell was pretty big at that time.
Yeah. Yeah, C. Thomas. It's me, Pony Boy. You ever see Far Out Man? Far Out Man with Tommy Chong?
Yeah.
Far Out Man with Tommy Chong. He directed it. And C. Thomas Howell's in it, and he plays himself. And he's trying to convince Judd Nelson, you know, he's like, hey, man, I'm C. Thomas, man. C. Thomas. Pony Boy. Look, man, I'm Pony Boy. Because at the time, he was either he was dating Ray Don Chong.
Mm-hmm.
In real life. So Tommy Chong put him in the movie. Judd Nelson's in it, and a person comes up to him because he's like, hey, man, you know, because like C. Thomas is fawning all over him. It's such a stupid movie, but every C. Thomas Howell scene is funny. But then some other person comes up and sees Judd Nelson and thinks he's Nicolas Cage. And he goes, hey, Nicolas Cage, I loved you and Peggy Sue Got Married. And Judd Nelson goes, I think my work in Birdie is much better. Clearly improvised, you know, because Tommy Chong's not going to write that. But yeah, the original Hitcher, man, that's a movie right there. That's a movie. Mm-hmm. Eric Red wrote that. I'm friends with him on Facebook, Eric Red. He wrote that, and he co-wrote Near Dark. Yeah. I mean, you know, please. And he made Body Parts. You ever see Body Parts with Jeff Fahey?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I just I feel bad for C. Thomas Howell, but Why? Not that bad.
Why?
Because he does the Hitcher, and then... Soul Man.
Well, Soul Man is...
That is probably one of the worst decisions you possibly could have made.
I still, to this day, I have no idea how that movie got made. I swear to God, I have no
idea. In 86.
How that movie got... It was the same year as The Hitcher.
Yeah.
How that movie got made and why James Earl Jones is in it. I have... Ray Don Chong is in it.
Leslie Nielsen? It's Julia Louis-Dreyfus?
It is just... at its core, the idea of the movie is so blatantly offensive. C. Thomas Howell in blackface? Really? Seriously? And it was released in, you know, nationwide in theaters in 1986. Hey, it's wacky C. Thomas Howell, 80s comedy. I was completely, my jaw was on the floor while I was watching that movie. When I saw it in the theater, I was like, I can't believe that this is a thing.
It's more shocking than, like, I Spit on Your Grave.
Oh, it
honestly.
Is. I mean, no, seriously.
I could see how I Spit on Your Grave would get made. But
no
this
idea
is just...
how Soul Man, how in God's name did Soul Man get made? I still, to this day, anytime I see, and I don't see a lot of posters for Soul Man, but if I'm looking around on the web and a picture from Soul Man pops up or something, I go, how did that movie get made? My God. All right. We've got more here of texts coming in. The next one that's on this list from What Culture. I'm so glad that they picked this one. It's Prince of Darkness, which is not as big a movie as it should be, considering that it's John Carpenter. But it is, I think, easily one of his scariest movies, like one of his very scariest movies. Prince of Darkness is a really scary movie.
Donald Pleasance turn it on.
Man, Donald Pleasance rules. Victor Wong is in it. Dennis Dunn. He had half the cast from Big Trouble in Little China come back for that movie. Jameson Parker. Lisa Blount. Lisa Blount, by the way, who I mentioned a little bit earlier, because Lisa Blount is the nurse who sticks the hypodermic needle in the guy's eye in Dead and Buried.
Of course.
And she's also fantastic in Officer and Gentleman.
You know, I always forget that Donald Pleasance was Blofeld.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was Blofeld.
Do you know who Carpenter originally wanted to play Loomis, right?
Who?
Peter Cushing!
Oh.
He wanted Peter Cushing!
You know, I gotta say, though, I'm pretty happy with Donald Pleasance.
Oh, no.
It's like, you can't lose with that.
No. It's an iconic performance, and nobody else. But, I mean, sure. Do you know how much more I would have even liked Halloween?
Yeah. It's weird to think that there's, like, a universe where that exists.
Peter Cushing, and then he offered to Christopher Lee, both of them, and they both turned it down. And then he had to convince Donald Pleasance. And Donald Pleasance only did. You know why Donald Pleasance did it? The only reason he did it?
Why?
Because his daughter loved the soundtrack to Assault on Precinct 13. She's like, you got to work with this guy. It's the best music I've ever heard in my life. So that's why he did it. He's like, all right. He didn't want to do it. He was like, I don't want to do some stupid B-horror movie. And then, you know,
I certainly don't want to do it 3 to 4 more times.
Well, that's the thing. He was arguing on the set. He was very, during the making of Halloween, Pleasance made it known that he was not happy. He wasn't happy with the script. He didn't like the idea. He thought it was stupid. He would argue with Carpenter all the time. But who went on to do all the sequels? Pleasance.
Especially one of my favorites, Halloween 4.
Oh, my God. Even after he gets blown up in Halloween 2. They blow him up in Halloween 2. But he comes back for 4 and 5.
And then where he gets blown up again.
Yeah.
At the gas station.
Ridiculous. Anyway. All right. From the Rocket Man soundtrack, which is a movie that I loved, and that's a part of the Two for Tuesday. Two for Tuesday! 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So, before the break, we mentioned Prince of Darkness, which is mentioned in this article as an underrated cult horror movie. And Prince of Darkness is the second part of what John Carpenter dubbed his Apocalypse Trilogy, which began with The Thing and ended with In the Mouth of Madness. Though the three films are different stories, not directly connected, they all deal with the threat that could destroy humanity if allowed to go unchecked. Yeah, but, you know, the Apocalypse Trilogy, but yeah, you know, I mean, but in Escape from L.A., he ends the world, Snake ends the world. Like, he ends the world.
That's a different trilogy, man.
I know.
That's the Escape trilogy.
Yeah, I know.
Escape from New Orleans, man?
It's the, you know, there was rumor that they were going to do Escape from Earth.
My God,
like a big sci-fi thing, Escape from Earth.
John Carpenter, call me.
It never happened. It never. I don't even think he got past the writing the whole script. It was just an idea that he and Kurt Russell were batting around.
Well, Robert Rodriguez is rebooting it. He's doing Escape from New York.
Is that the one with Gerard Butler? Wasn't Gerard Butler attached to it?
I think he might have been attached at one point, but I think they're scrapping that.
God. Leave it alone. So, it's just a really... Here's what they say. Prince of Darkness is an elegantly photographed, legitimately frightening tale that does not shirk away from its controversial concepts. The first half of this movie is pure horror gold. Ambient lighting, a tremendously creepy score, a real sense of gloom and dread paint the backdrop for the deliberately paced second act and the ultimate climax. In short, it is without question one of Carpenter's most underrated movies and one that doesn't deserve to be forgotten. Totally agree 100%. 100%. Well, here's a classic. You ever seen Possession from 1981?
No, I have not.
It's an unbelievable movie. From 1981. And it's a beautiful movie too, but it's also absolutely terrifying. Let's see, we got some texts here. 847 or Aileen says, I'm new to the horror genre, no idea if it's B-rated, but I just watched Eraserhead. it sounds in that what would creep me out so much about the story. Yeah, I mean, I don't consider Eraserhead a B movie.
No, but it's not a bad place to get into like weird stuff.
Yeah, no, it evokes weirdness. There's no question about it. But to me, that's an art house movie, mm-hmm. Eraserhead.
Mm-hmm.
847 area code says the movie Alive. No, It's Alive. It's a ripoff of Rosemary's Baby. That commercial for that movie scared the crap out of me in the 70s. Yeah, It's Alive. Just a couple months ago, we lost the great Larry Cohen. And I remember seeing that movie. I vividly remember seeing that movie. I think it was at the Portage Theater, if I'm not mistaken. 607 area code says, thank you for mentioning the movie Alice, Sweet Alice. I've been trying to remember that movie title since I was a boy. Also called Communion.
We're doing the Lord's work on this show.
Yeah. Kurt says, do you remember The Hidden? It was a favorite of Buzz Kilman and Tony Fitzpatrick. I love that movie. Yeah. Buzz and Tony did love that movie. It's a great movie. The Hidden's fantastic. Very entertaining movie. 630 area code also wants to mention Prince of Darkness. Just came across this one. Not sure if it's been mentioned, but Driller Killer from 1979 looks weird. It is weird. And it's called Driller Killer.
I wonder what it's about.
Yeah, the plot's being left to your imagination. That movie called Driller Killer. Sounds like a romantic comedy to me. Is Billy Crystal in it? Okay, the next one mentioned in this article, of course, is Audition. which is fine for about an hour and a half. It's creepy, you know? But then it just goes off the rails. The last 20 minutes of that movie, man. Oh, my God. I remember the first time I saw Audition, and it's weird that I'd seen it more than once, because I don't know a lot of people who would actually volunteer to see Audition more than once.
Yeah.
But I've seen it several times.
I'm a huge fan of Takashi Miike.
Oh, me too.
He's me too. Something else. Although I like Audition a lot. But I'm always partial to Ichi the Killer, though.
Oh, it's a great movie.
That's absolutely about as gross as most movies can possibly get.
Yeah. The thing about it is, like, it's like, oh, Dad wants to get a date, you know, for Audition. It's like, oh,
Mom died of cancer.
He's gonna audition these ladies to be his date, and then meanwhile, the one woman has like a something in a bag in her apartment that's like moving.
Yeah.
Like, with the phone's ringing, and all of a sudden there's, like, a bag in the middle of the apartment. I remember that was the first time I went, hey, the hell's going on?
Yeah.
And then it builds up to that ending. I just...
Absurd. It's absurd.
It is, yeah. But it's great.
Yeah, it's...
it's great.
I think that's 20 years old this year. That's a 99.
Is it a 99?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, it is. 20 years old. Hey, did you watch? Did you ever catch up and watch the Masters of Horror series on Showtime?
Yeah, I managed to find a copy of like Volume 1 at the library. They managed to have it on DVD.
I could bring it in. I've got them all.
Please do, because I enjoyed every minute.
I've got them all.
Yeah,
and Takashi Miike is insane.
Yeah,
but the best one is Carpenter. Carpenter. Mm-hmm. He did two of them. He did a thing called Pro Life. And then he did one called Cigarette Burns. And I think Cigarette Burns is one of the best things he's ever done. And I'm talking his movies. I'm talking everything. Not just the best little TV show that he did. Cigarette Burns, Norman Reedus is in it. Udo Kier. It is brilliant. It's brilliant. And I think it's one of the best things he's ever done. But I got the whole set. I got the whole deal.
I know. Argento's got at least one.
Argento's got two. Yeah.
He's got two of them?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good.
Too many Mick Garris for my liking, though. John McNaughton's got one in there. I mean, they pretty much touched on everybody. Landis did too. Yeah, no, I'll bring those in. I loved Masters of Horror. I loved it.
Mick Garris.
Yeah, too many Mick Garris for my liking. All right, let's take a break. The news is coming up right after this. My train is going. I see it in your eyes. The love, the need, your tears. But I'll be lonely without you. And I'll need your love to see. Who the hell requested Styx?
That would be Mike in Louisville.
Not even from Chicago?
No.
This guy's got no excuse. I could understand. He's from the south side of Chicago. I could understand requesting Styx because there's something wrong with that, but I can understand it. Maybe he's originally from the south side of Chicago.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe there's a big fan base in Louisville.
Because, you know, they probably played his prom. Styx played like 900 homecoming dances and proms on the south side of Chicago. I can't tell you the number of people who've called in and said, yeah, Styx played my prom, man. Styx played my homecoming. Not a fan of Styx.
What about Stones?
The Stones? Oh, no. I see what you did there. All right, I'm sorry. Hang on a second. Hold on. All right.
Got my cup of Henny Youngman juice over here.
Took me a couple of minutes to get in line with the thinking there because I thought you meant, do I like the Stones? I was gonna be like, what the hell is wrong with you?
See, that's how bad it was.
Jeez. All right, welcome back, everybody. We get to hear one more Styx song. Yay. Boy, and they picked a bad one, too. Babe? Yeah, if it was Renegade, that would be the only one.
Yeah.
Because I spent... Well, you know the story.
Yeah, I do.
All right. Here's Donald on WGN. Go ahead, Donald.
Hey, how you doing today? You sound full of your element today.
I'm full of something.
Well, I'm thinking... I'm reading It, you know, by Stephen King.
Sure.
The two that stick out in my mind are the ones he refers to. And in fact, one of the characters plays a part in his book. I was a teenage Frankenstein, and I was a teenage werewolf.
Yeah. I was a teenage Frankenstein, teenage werewolf. Those were big. Michael Landon was in I Was a Teenage Werewolf.
Right, and of course, it takes on that persona, you know, in the book. So.
Yeah, there you go. There's a couple of classic B-movies from the 50s right there. All right, Donald, thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. I remember when I first saw that I was a teenage werewolf, I really thought that I still think this, I really like the werewolf makeup in I Was a Teenage Werewolf. I think it's really cool. I think it's one of the best werewolf makeup jobs that I've seen. Yeah. I always thought that. I always thought it was a cool-looking werewolf. So. All right, next one here that we want to mention is, oh, geez, this movie. Tetsu the Iron Man. This is just, I don't even know what to say about this one. A man who collects scrap metal identified as the fetishist, slices his leg open with a knife and inserts metal pipe besides the thigh bone. And then it just grows from there. It's a relentlessly energetic film made at a time when the energy had all but disappeared from Japanese film, the culmination of a decade's worth of amateur short filmmaking and the crowning achievement on the activities of a private experimental theater group. Tetsu has all the characteristics of unbridled zeal and amateur enthusiasm, and all the signs of true filmmaking talent. A film that combines nightmare imagery with modern industrial sensibilities. In short, it's extreme Asian cinema at its finest. I remember I saw that one at a midnight. First time I saw that movie was at a midnight show, and I didn't see it right. Like it had been out already for a while, and I didn't see it, so I was playing catch up on it. And I saw it at Bruinview. I saw it at Bruinview at the midnight show, and it had been out already, and it already became kind of notorious. And I was like, "What the hell am I watching?" Maniac, again brought up this morning. The best exploitation films make you feel like a dirtbag simply by association. That certainly is the case with Maniac. Watching them, whether you're a movie theater full of like-minded fans or alone on your comfiest couch, you'll be repulsed by but yet also weirdly fascinated. How could someone make this thing that's so depraved, and why am I voluntarily watching it? Like the best exploitation films, Maniac leaves you itching for a long, hot shower to wash away any secondhand sweat and grime. Hey, by the way, you know the... By the way, Maniac has been hailed as one of the most troubling pictures ever made. Gruesome effects by Tom Savini highlight the feature and adds to the even more severely grim atmosphere. People have called the film an abomination, filthy trash, and even worst of the worst. In other words, it's a must-see. Now, do you know that the scene where the maniac jumps on Spinell jumps on top of the hood of that car with the shotgun and then blows the guy's head completely off? Okay, they didn't have permits to be out there. They didn't have a permit to use a gun, and that's a real shotgun. They blow the dummy's head off, and then they got in their cars and drove away. The filmmakers.
That's some real guerrilla filmmaking.
Oh, absolutely.
Right there. Jeez.
So, you know, like William Lustig's like, yeah, whatever, man, just get a shotgun, blow the thing up. And like, you know, like the crew is like, we can't do that, and we don't have permits to be out here. Because they were, if I remember correctly, I haven't seen Maniac in a really long time. But if I remember correctly, they're not very far from the Hollywood sign. I think that scene takes place pretty close to the Hollywood sign. And so they just had a stuntman get up on top of the hood of the car and actually blow a couple of rounds of shotgun shells through the windshield and blow the head up. It looked fantastic.
Yeah, that's risky.
Yeah. I guess Savini just filled the head with all kinds of gook and stuff. And so when he shot the shotgun, it just the head completely exploded. And then they jumped in their cars and got the hell out of there. I guess Lustig had three cameras set up so he would get coverage. And then he shot the shotgun one. Because, you know, it's like the shotgun goes off in the middle of the Hollywood Hills.
People are going to notice.
People are going to notice. And so they jumped in their cars and drove out of there. That was one of the many stories behind the making of Maniac. And there are many. And, of course, William Lustig would go on to make Maniac Cop. with Robert Zadar. You got to love that guy.
Yeah, I do. I really do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's been at our convention a couple of times, and did he pass away? I think he passed away.
I believe so. Yeah,
he's a very nice guy, and of course, one of the most unique looking men that you will ever see. Yeah, I mean, just nobody else on the planet looked like him, for sure. But yeah, Maniac Cop. And then he made Maniac Cop 2. What else did William Lustig make? I can't remember what his other movies were. Here's Keith on WGN. Hey, Keith.
Hey, Nick. How's it going?
All right. What's up?
Remember the movie Wraith with Charlie Sheen? He's a alien that comes down. He assumes the form of a car, and he goes. He's street racing out in a mountain with gang or something like that.
That's the Wraith. Yeah, the Wraith.
Yeah. That's kind of a offshoot B movie.
It certainly is. Yeah. And that movie, Keith, that movie's got a really pretty big cult following. The Wraith.
Really?
Yeah. When it came out, it didn't do very well at the box office. I think it was like 1987 or 88 or something when The Wraith came out. And it didn't do anything. It didn't get particularly good reviews or anything. But then years have passed, and a lot of people really love that movie.
Huh.
Yeah.
Never would have figured that one.
Yeah. You never know what's going to age well. You just don't.
That's true. That's true.
All right, Keith. Thanks, buddy.
All right, man.
Yeah, The Wraith with Charlie Sheen. It's turned out to be sort of a cult classic now. I remember when it came out, and like, nothing. Oh, I got to sneeze, I think. Hold on. Whew. That was a good one. Part of my brain came out through my nose. All right.
The sneeze report.
Thank you. Okay. Here is Frank on WGN. Hi, Frank.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you doing this morning?
All right, buddy. What's up?
Hey, how about Motel Hell with Roy Calhoun?
You just made my father's day. Let me just tell you that right now. That's one of my father's favorite movies of all time, Motel Hell.
Oh, it was freaked me out when I was a kid.
Yeah. With the big pig head and the chainsaw. And all
the bags
stuff.
Over the head.
Yep.
In the garden.
Man. It's a classic. Motel Hell's a classic. My dad adores
that. Best meat you ever had.
Yep. All right, thanks.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
You ever see Motel Hell?
I did after you told me your dad really liked it and went out and rented it.
He loves Motel Hell. And, you know, for people who have seen Motel Hell, they're like, your dad loves Motel Hell? He's constantly asking me to screen it at my film club. Can't you screen Motel Hell? And I'm like, four people will show up, Dad. Me, you, two other people. And they'll both be weirdos. But I like Motel Hell. I like it. Ridiculous. The plot is insane. The plot is insane. Farmer Vincent and his sister, Rory Calhoun, by the way, legendary star Rory Calhoun. They run a hotel or a motel. When people stay there, Farmer Vincent and his sister knock them out, bring them out to a garden, bury them up to their necks, cut their vocal cords so they can't scream, feed them a bunch of food so they get fat, and then use them to make beef jerky. That's the plot of the movie. And it's one of my dad's favorite movies of all time.
I mean, it's great for kids. It's great for parents, you know.
Great for everybody. The meat industry. It's just, yeah. So it is a cult classic, though. It really is. And for good reason. 1980, that movie came out. Saw it at the Gateway Theater, which is now the Copernicus Center, right by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. All right, let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll wrap the show up and wrap up more. We'll finish off this B cult horror movie talk that we've been having. And again, if you missed Joe Bob Briggs earlier in the show, just a few hours, it'll be up and running. You can get the podcast, and I suggest you listen to it because Joe Bob Briggs is fantastic. All right, we're coming up after this break. More. All right. That closes out Two for Tuesday for this week. Yeah, man, Two for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. We'll do it again next Tuesday, and that sticks. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mike from Louisville did ask me to mention that. One, he is from the south side of Chicago.
Okay, I figured.
And two, the sticks was for his wife. It was for his wife.
But he is from the south side. It makes total sense. Makes total sense. hey, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. At the top of the hour. One more quick thing about tonight. I want you guys to all come out to see Ghostbusters. We're celebrating the 35th anniversary at the AMC Rosemont 18 and also at Murray Brothers Caddyshack Restaurant right down the street. The movie starts at 8. I will introduce it. It is the 35th anniversary 4K restoration of the movie. And if you've never seen it on the big screen, you should. The reason I'm bringing it up again is because if you were thinking about going, you need to get your tickets because we're down to around 20 seats or so, maybe even less. So get your tickets now. It's only $10 to get in, and parking is free. $10 to get in, parking is free, but you got to get your seats now because I got a feeling that by the time 8 o'clock tonight rolls around, we're going to be completely sold out. And if you don't want to miss out on your chance of seeing the 35th anniversary big screen of Ghostbusters, then you got to get your tickets now. So go to amctheaters.com right now. Go to the seating chart, pick out your seats. They'll be there for you tonight. And make sure you stop by Murray Brothers Caddyshack beforehand around 6 or 6:30 or so. Stop in. They're going to have a 15% discount for all of my film club members. So make sure you've got your phone or a receipt or a ticket stub that you're going to go see Ghostbusters, and you will get 15% off all of your food. The food is great. There's a bunch of Bill Murray and Murray Brothers paraphernalia, including Ghostbusters stuff, all over the place in there. They're going to have drink specials and Ghostbusters-themed stuff. We're going to celebrate the 35th anniversary of Ghostbusters tonight, first at Murray Brothers Caddyshack, and then by seeing the movie on the big screen in all its glory. And, again, only $10. Parking is free. But the tickets are flying, and I think we're going to be sold out. So if you're thinking about going, get those tickets now and go to you can go to amctheaters.com right now and reserve those seats. We don't want you to miss out. And if you have questions or you want to make a reservation or anything at the Caddyshack restaurant, you can call 847-443-3673. 847-443-3673. And again, get those tickets now because they're flying. amctheaters.com for Ghostbusters on the big screen tonight. All right. Let's see. Going back to this, to round out this article that we read from What Culture. And of course, we get to Suspiria, which is a movie that's it's been mentioned a few times on this show. Suspiria is a masterwork of violence and color brought to us by the Italian master of gore, Dario Argento. The film follows an American ballet dancer whose excitement at being accepted to a prestigious European dance school turns to terror when she discovers that the institution is a cover for a murderous coven of witches. By infusing the haunting melodies of his frequent musical collaborators, The Goblin, the expressive and surreal kaleidoscope of color palette of reds, greens, and blues, and otherworldly locations of a troubled ballet school. He was able to make a film that transcends the genre, opening up a whole new world for creative minds to express their wildest and bloodiest dreams. It's one of the greatest horror movies ever made, and still, for me, scariest movie I've ever seen. Suspiria is, without question, still the scariest movie I've ever seen. And I don't care that people have an issue with there being a giant room filled with barbed wire in the middle of a ballet dance building. Doesn't bother me at all. Dance school? Yeah, that makes perfect sense that there is a mountain of barbed wire in a room.
That's how I learned to dance. That's
exactly right.
You know, Mom just threw me in the barbed wire.
That's right. Sleepaway Camp with one of the most insane endings of any movie ever. And by the way, the girl from that movie has been to flashback several times, and she's pretty nuts. We get to Reanimator, which we talked a little bit about earlier. This is one of my favorite movies, way ahead of its time. Way ahead of its time. Videodrome.
Oh, man.
David Cronenberg. It's a masterpiece.
Debbie Harry.
It's insane. James Woods before he went nuts. Because he's lost his mind. James Woods has lost his mind. But that movie, it is completely inaccessible to humans. And I love it. I adore it. I remember I went with a friend of mine to see it, and he was so pissed when it was over. He was like, "What was that?" And I'm like, "That was a masterpiece. That's what that was."
I mean, it's probably Cronenberg's best movie.
It's one of his best movies. Dead Ringers is my favorite Cronenberg.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's another legendary movie, Black Christmas. The original Black Christmas is so great.
I find it hard to watch.
Why?
It's not that I don't like it. I do enjoy it, but there's some part of it that feels so, it's so mean. Like the fact that they've got the girl up there just asphyxiated with the back, like the entire time in the rocking chair.
Creepy, man.
It's so freaky. And yeah. Like...
And the subjective point of view was 3 years before Carpenter.
So uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But Margot Kidder.
Margot Kidder, Andrea Martin.
Yeah.
Olivia Hussey. Hello! That's my imitation of Olivia Hussey answering the phone in Black Christmas. Hello! Hello! Keir Dulay. It's a great movie, man.
We just got a text in that I think might upset you a little bit.
Wow.
From the 630. The remake of Suspiria is so much better.
Well, here's the deal. It's not, but it's great.
It is great.
It's great.
It's a completely different movie.
It's a completely different movie. But I don't think it's better than the original, but I do think it's great. And that surprises the hell out of me, because last year at this time, I was like, this Suspiria movie never should be made, and I will kill someone. And then after I saw the remake of Suspiria, I was like, okay, it's great. And I've seen it several times.
Yeah, Luca Guadagnino.
Yep. Yeah. And then they say Return of the Living Dead, which is a classic. And then they picked Torso as the biggest cult horror movie of all time.
Huh.
I mean, it inspired a lot of movies. Torso inspired a lot of movies. And it was kind of groundbreaking in terms of content at the time it was released.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it.
Yeah. So, all right. And then we'll wrap it up here. Basket Case, which is awesome. Belial Rules. Puppet Master. They were both weird. Yes, they were. 5-4 area code says, Let's Scare Jessica to Death from 1971. Very eerie and creepy. 70s horror was the best horror. Let's Scare Jessica to Death is great. And then the movie Terror Vision was a trip. Okay.
That was a trip, man.
It was a trip. So thanks, everybody. And thanks to Joe Bob Briggs. That's why we were talking about those kind of movies this morning. It was great having him on. So that the podcast will be up soon. By the way, tomorrow on the show, Wild Card Wednesday, another round of Know Your Onion, and we'll do a sports recap with Mark Carman. We usually do Kevin Powell, but he's not available, so Mark's going to sit in. Good old Carm is going to be here, so we'll talk sports with Mark Carman and much more. That's on tomorrow's show.